Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 22nd, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're reading in the book of Matthew. Last week it was chapter 26. This week it's chapter 27, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 27. When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself, and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, What is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple, and departed, and went and hanged himself. And the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, It is not lawful for to put them into the treasury, because it is the price of blood. And they took counsel, and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Wherefore that field was called the field of blood unto this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremy the prophet, saying, And they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value, and gave them for the potter's field, as the Lord appointed me. And Jesus stood before the governor. And the governor asked him, saying, Art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto him, Thou sayest. And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then said Pilate unto him, Hearest thou not how many things they witness against thee? And he answered him to never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Now at that feast the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner, whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas, or Jesus, which is called Christ? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, Have thou nothing to do with that just man? For I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, Whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate saith unto them, What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, Let him be crucified. And the governor said, Why, what evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, Let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, His blood be on us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them. And when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the common hall, and gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers. And they stripped him, and put on him a scarlet robe. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head, and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him, and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews! And they spit upon him, and took the reed, and smote him on the head. And after that they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him, and put his own raiment on him, and led him away to crucify him. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross. And when they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar to drink mingled with gall, and when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him, and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet, "They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots." And sitting down, they watched him there, and set up over his head his accusation written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and another on the left. And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land unto the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," that is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, "This man calleth for Elias." And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. The rest said, "Let be, let us see whether Elias will come to save him." Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose, and came out of the graves after his resurrection, and went into the holy city, and appeared unto many. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, "Truly this was the Son of God." And many women were there, beholding afar off, which followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering unto him, among which was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James and Joses, and the mother of Zebedee's children. When the even was come, there came a rich man of Arimathea, named Joseph, who also himself was Jesus' disciple. He went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered. And when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn out in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre, and departed. And there was Mary Magdalene, and the other Mary, sitting over against the sepulchre. Now the next day, that followed the day of the preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees came together unto Pilate, saying, "Sir, we remember that that deceiver said, while he was yet alive, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' Command therefore that the sepulchre be made sure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away, and say unto the people, 'He is risen from the dead.' So the last error shall be worse than the first." Pilate said unto them, "Ye have a watch. Go your way, make it as sure as ye can." So they went and made the sepulchre sure, sealing the stone and setting a watch.
Okay, tonight we're going to start off with some mailed-in questions. Jan, do we have any questions?
Yes, we have 8.5.
Well, let's start off with some. We'll take those questions and move from there.
Okay. This is a question on a motion to dismiss. Can we ask partial summary for judgment during motion to dismiss opposition briefs? Actually, I filed a complaint against the city, and they filed a motion to dismiss. Failure to state a claim, but did not oppose a couple of things in my claim.
Is that the end?
That's the end.
Yeah, what was the first part of the question, the actual part, to the beginning of that?
Okay, and it's on motion to dismiss. motion to dismiss, can we ask partial summary for judgment during motion to dismiss opposition briefs?
Sir, I'm presuming what they're saying, you're coming in a little echoey, but it sounds like they're saying that there was a claim came in and someone was making a motion and they wanted to make a motion also?
Yeah, well, they filed a motion to dismiss.
And?
Because of failure to state a claim.
Oh, well, that's the Rule 12. Yeah, they do that. I'm confused on this again. I'm not getting it all because you're echoing. Let me ask you, who's making the motion? Is it the person asking the question, and it's their court, or was it someone else? Was he or she filing a paper, and then the other side was making that motion?
He filed a complaint against the city, and they filed a motion to dismiss.
Okay, under Rule 12, failing to state a claim. So what was the question now about concerning that? Can they do that?
Can he ask partial summary for judgment and during motion to dismiss opposition briefs?
Yeah, well, they're not gonna hear a second. They'll take the second motion. They're not going to hear the second motion until the first motion is done with, and surely they're going to dismiss the case because that's what they do. I, myself, and many, many other people constantly in Rule 12 in order to get into an answer. Hang on, let me mute yourself again because you're echoing through me. Let's try that again. Okay. Anyway, they do that all the time. It's Rule 12. Rules don't apply to we the people. The Rules Enabling Act of 1934 that they passed unlawfully because it was unconstitutional for numerous reasons. Of course, the first and major one was it done away with common law. It negated it and combined common law and equity together, and they call it civil law. So it's nothing. And the rules of the court, we operate under the rules of common law. All of our papers, as far as our founding documents and, of course, our cases and law, are to be under the rules of common law. But that included equity also. The rules of equity should be under common law also. For it, equity in itself also is a common law process in the sense that authority was given to the legislators in order to write the legislation to control the government itself, the different agencies and commercial activities and so on, and that's authorized under Article 1, Section 8. Now, it's all unlawful. And even the Supreme Court has ruled concerning Rule 12, but they won't hear that either. They've said that under Rule 12 that a case should be heard anyway because if it doesn't have merit, it'll fail on its face, and it should fail quite quickly. And the courts have ignored those decisions, and that's been decided more than one time. So they move on, and they do what they want. We do not have courts of law. We don't have any court that is just open. There's possibly one here or one there that you get a judge that might trying to be living under or ruling under common law or under law, but it's doubtful, to be honest with you. But in any event, they make it up as they go. They're going to kick us all out in Rule 12. That's a constant thing all the time. I mean, you can have the most powerful case in the world. They're going to throw it out on Rule 12 if they don't want to hear it. And that's unfortunate. Anyway, that's the sad truth of the matter. Next question. Jan, you still with us? And maybe we'll pass by this. Terry, do you have any of the questions also? Maybe you can take up because I'm not hearing Jan at all now.
Yeah, I'm not hearing him either, and I had not prepared the questions because he said he was going to get it.
Okay. All right, well, his computer's coming in really bad. Is he coming in on his laptop or something?
Yes, he is. He's not at home.
Okay. All right. You want to try again? You have another question?
Yeah. Again? My question is in regards to
I can't understand anything you're saying, so we'll pass up on the questions this week. We'll try it next week. All right. Okay, with that, Gerard, you want to take the mic? I believe we have a guest we're going to talk about something tonight. Gerard?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, I believe we have a guest. Joe's on with us. And
yeah, Joe Barton.
But introduce Joe, and let's get into it.
Well, nobody does better than Joe. But Joe is from New York, Woodstock, New York. He's a longtime patriot fighting in the courts, him and his wife Paula, who has recently deceased. But here, I guess last year sometime, Joe will give you the details. You know, they refuse to wear masks. They don't believe they have to, and the statute even says that they don't have to, but of course, you know, just like they do at Rule 12, everybody interprets things to the, you know, their own way, and they don't listen to that part of the statute. The statute is written, it says everybody must wear a mask if it can be tolerated, and it doesn't say you need a medical excuse. It says if it can be tolerated. It's up to you to decide why you can't tolerate it if you don't want to wear it, and they can't ask you why.
Yeah, and bear in mind, that's an executive order, so it's not even a statute. But
it's not a law, that's right. It's an executive order. And that's why they had to write it that way, because they can't, we can't, you know, if they try to write a decree and call it a law, that's unconstitutional, and they know that. So then what they do is they try to get you arrested for trespass, because you get the owner of the store to say that you got to leave, and you can't do that. You can't give somebody a charge of trespass because you want them to wear a mask, and you're gonna take the trespassing statute and put it on them to enforce your mask statute. It's a misapplication of the law. But I don't want to take the wind out of Joe's sails. Joe could do a much better job of this than me, and I'm gonna go ahead and open him up so that he can give you an introduction. Joe has done radio shows. He ran his own studio over in Woodstock for many years. He invited John and I down to, and along with Lydia, they had control of MMS Studios in Manhattan, and we did some, you know, that's public broadcasting, which they pretty much took over there for a lot of years. And you know, they invited us down, and they cut some TV shows and DVDs with me and John, and that was 5 or 6 years ago probably already. But anyway, his wife and him had their own shows. I think Joe's show was called Pot Talk, and Gloria's was Down the Rabbit Hole, and they were all the local people listened to them and then some, and they created quite a stir because they would take the local issues. And of course, there's nothing worse than the shining light on for a politician, of the people shining a light on the stuff that they try to do to people. Anyway, I'm going to open Joe up so that he can talk.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can. How you doing tonight, Joe?
I'm doing pretty good. I would like to say that I was perfectly within a lawful setting, me and Paula, when we originally went to health food stores and different stores around. Now, Paula had breast cancer and was having trouble breathing. I don't mind telling people that what our problems were. And I had 2 heart attacks, and I've smoked cigarettes I'm 74, and I've smoked since I was 16, so I have trouble breathing. I went into the local health food store here in Kingston, Mother Earth, and me and Paula, and we'd been thrown out of many stores and just couldn't get food. Paula was losing weight, and they threw us out one time, and then the next time we went back to shop, we decided that we were going to stand our ground. And we went in, and the owner of the store came and said, "You can't be in here without masks." And I gave him, because I went loaded with law, I gave him the law that says this is a place of public accommodation and you can't discriminate. And I also gave him Cuomo's executive order that says if a mask is intolerable, you don't have to wear one. And he ripped them up in complete disregard to the law and told us we had to leave. And me and Paula had already decided we were going to challenge this. We were going to take this on. So we said, no, we're shopping. We're not going to leave. And we would continued shopping while he called the police. Then when we went up to the counter to try to pay for our groceries, we went to the first counter and they threw up a sign, closed. Then we went to the next counter and they threw up a sign, closed. Then we went to the third counter and they threw up a sign, closed. Meantime, they were herding other people around us and taking the signs away and letting them pay for their groceries.
Then, boy, doesn't that sound like Nazi Germany? Go ahead.
Yeah, then the owner of the store came and took the groceries out of our cart and gave them to one of his employees and said, put these back, right? By now, the police had showed up, and I gave the police a copy of the same, because we went loaded with the law, of the same paperwork that said, this is a place of public accommodation, and they can't discriminate. They can't discriminate for race, for religion, or for if you have a health condition. Right? And I also gave him Cuomo's paperwork that says if you find a mask intolerable, you don't have to wear one. And the owner wanted the police to arrest us, and I told the police, I don't want you to arrest us. I want him to sign a complaint because I don't want to sue the police. Actually, these two cops that were with us, they were very nice, and I have nothing against the police. They were trying not to arrest us, and even he was very concerned that we couldn't get groceries. I told him every store we went to turned us away. We couldn't get groceries anymore, and it was time for us to finally take a stand. And then the owner of the store finally signed a complaint, and we got arrested for trespassing. Now, no place in the trespassing statutes does it say you're trespassing if you don't wear a mask. We were totally in compliance with the law, yet he had us arrested. And then
that's like filing a false report, isn't it, Joe?
And that's exactly what we said. We went and filed paperwork saying against him, saying that he filed a false police report.
There you go.
Now, the prosecutor, he was afraid. He actually said to me, well, after I told him a bunch of stuff, and after Paula died eventually because she lost so much weight and the stress of going to court, and but she already had breast cancer, and she was in pretty bad shape, and dragging her to court twice didn't help, and not having food didn't help. But I told the prosecutor, I gave him the federal law that the Supreme Court ruled to misapply a statute is to lose authority. And the Rod Class case said that, and there's another one, I forget that offhand, that the Supreme Court ruled twice. To misapply a statute is to lose authority. And I told him and the judge that she didn't have jurisdiction, and the prosecutor didn't have authority to continue with this case, but he chose to keep doing it. They canceled the date because of COVID right now, and I guess the weather. We wouldn't go in court with masks, so the judge actually came outside and held the court case outside, and we had about 35 people that showed up to support us, which I could use people if I have to go back again. I really could use a lot of people to come and witness it. It's always good to have witnesses, especially when judges and prosecutors act in a criminal manner, which right now they're violating the law. The judge is in violation of the law, the prosecutor's in violation of the law. I showed him all the law that says me and Paula were not in violation of any laws, that the statutes were being misapplied, and they chose to ignore it. Now, for a judge to ignore law and a prosecutor to ignore law, they are acting as criminals. I really want your audience to understand this. There are ways when these people disregard the law that you can go after them, that you can charge them with crimes, which I intend to do. But anyway, then the prosecutor said to me, well, maybe if you sit down with the owner of the store and the chief of police, maybe we could work something out, implying that he would drop the charges on me if I agree not to sue the owner of the store or the police, which I don't have any intention of suing the police, but I do the store owner. When the store owner ripped up the law and disregarded the law, he was in violation of the law. So I intend to fight this case all the way, and if I win, which I should win, I intend to go after this store owner. Is Lydia on the line?
She is. She's here. Did you want me to unmute her?
Yeah, you could unmute her, because Lydia is one of my best.
Hello.
Yeah, I unmuted you, but I
thought
yeah,
Joe, it was both of them. Joe's unmuted again now too.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just real quick, Joe. Did they make any decisions in your case yet? I know last time we went up, they put it off for another day, but they didn't make any decisions yet, right?
No, they haven't made any decisions. I think they don't really know what to do, and I understand that you have a similar case where with the mask, John.
Yeah, with the post office. Well, let me ask you a question. You don't have a date yet or a tentative date, right, because of the weather and the covert and everything, right?
Yeah, no, I don't. I wish I did. I'd give it to you.
As soon as you know, let us know. We'll put the word out and try to get as many people. We've got a lot of people in New York and a lot of people up your way, so to speak. So we should be able to get a lot of people to come up from National Liberty Alliance. I know I'll be up there, and I'm sure Gerard will be there too.
Yeah, I can use all the support I can get.
I know I started a little bit of paperwork on you, for you. Do you still need me to finish off on that? Because I know there were some changes you wanted to make, and then you lost, your wife.
Well, I want to see how it goes. If they rule against me, I definitely want to take it up into higher court.
Yeah, but it's time. Can I
interject for a minute?
Yeah, hang on 1 second. I'll give it back to you, Lydia. Hang on a second. But you could,
okay.
you should file an action against them in the same court. You should start off in the same court. So, but you, have you considered to do that, or have you done that yet to file a counterclaim?
You have any law that can help me with that, I would appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we should talk with
way.
The sheriff up there, and maybe you should file a complaint on the sheriff and have an arrest warrant go out for a false arrest. But we'll talk about that offline. Meanwhile, I'll let Lydia take up.
Can I interject for a minute?
Sure.
I want to say this very strongly. My name's Lydia Radin, and we all need to support Joe Barton's case, because Joe Barton and John Durash have perfect adherence to the law. Okay, they're not breaking the law. In fact, while I was listening to Joe speak, please everybody take notes and confirm this for yourself, because I'm reading the New York Criminal Code. And in order to be, yeah, this is section 140 .00, the definitions of terms. Now, in order for them to cite you for trespass, you have to enter or remain unlawfully. A person who, regardless of his intent, enters or remains in or upon premises which are at the time open to the public, does so with license and privilege unless he defies a lawful order not to enter or remain. Now, what no one can articulate in Joe Barton's case, and in John Durash's case, what is the lawful order that they defied? There is none. It is the creatures of law, the police and the judges, who are defying the law with acts of impunity in violation of Supreme Court rulings, United States versus Lee. They are creatures of the law. They are bound by the law. When they break the law, they go to jail. And when they fail and refuse to correct their harmful mistakes, they are obstructing justice under Title 18, which is a very serious crime because Joe Barton is the witness complainant informant. And John Durash is the witness complainant informant. If you are not, and Joe Barton hit this right on the head, this is why we all need to support his case. The governor's order says expressly, you must wear a mask unless it's intolerable to you. And it isn't, you don't have to say why, you don't have to have your rights to privacy violated under the HIPAA laws. The executive wrote the order this way because he knew that we the people had expressed ourselves in statutes, in many statutes, and he could not issue an executive order to contravene those statutes. So Joe Barton and John Durash have perfect adherence to the law. They rise in defense of the law. They're protecting our government of laws. And who is destroying our government of laws? Our servants. And if you'd like me to quote the Supreme Court cases, I can do it at a later date. But what's most important is we all need to support Joe Barton's case, which came first in time. And he has many compelling litigation points. He should win. He should get an apology. He should get damages for what he's been through. And our servants who are breaking the law act with acts of impunity, who are standing in defiance of the law should prevail. Statutes should prevail. When they refuse to allow statute to prevail, our servants are destroying our government of laws. And the United States Supreme Court has called them, they are destroying our government of laws. That's treason, insurrection, sedition. That's what the Supreme Court has said over and over again. And in one of the cases that Joe touched on, which was Rod Class's case that went to the Supreme Court, the Circuit Court, when it was remanded to the Circuit Court, they quoted federal law that said citizens should know the law. They expect all of us to know the law. Well, you know something? They're required to know the law, too, and because they're creatures of the law and they're bound by the law and because they're educated in the law, they are held to a higher standard. So when they defy the law with acts of impunity, as here, they're held to a higher standard. That's high treason.
Now you people see why I love Lydia.
We all love Lydia.
What we are doing here is we're having perfect adherence. Joe Barton has had perfect adherence to the law. He did his duty. He did a super due diligence because he tried to educate the police. He tried to educate the shop owner. It's the shop owner who's liable here because as I finish reading this, unless this is a definition of terms from the New York Penal Code, unless he defies a lawful order not to enter or remain personally communicated to him by the owner of such premises or other authorized person. So Joe Barton is trying to educate the owner of this premises that he is acting in defiance of the law to break our government of laws. And what happens? Our servants collude, conspire, aid and abet in this traitor's unlawful conduct. So what's wonderful, thank you, John, for having us on. John does a wonderful job in trying to educate the people. There's many free materials that you need to educate yourself because remember in Rodney Class's case, which went to the Supreme Court, misapplication of statute, to break a statute, to violate a statute, the judge loses immunity, the judge loses authority, it's a violation of his oath to uphold, support, and defend the Constitution. It's a Cooper versus Aaron violation. But when this case came down to the Circuit Court, Rodney Class's case, the judges said that the citizens should know the law. So that's what John is trying to do, to meet his obligation to encourage everybody to do their due diligence to study the law. It is our duty to study. It is our duty to educate the people around us. And when our creatures of, when our servants who are creatures of the law, who break the law, they go to jail, not us. United States versus Lee.
So this case will set a precedent for everybody else that has had trouble with the mask in the future. I mean, if there was ever a time to resist, it's now. But go ahead.
And my God, you have elderly people coming to the store to buy food. Let's take the food out of their baskets, punish them in defiance of the law, commit acts of treason, high treason. What is wrong with these people? I mean, and then you have John. John, we'd love to hear about your incident with the mask. I believe you went to a post office, and they banned you from the post office because wearing a mask was likewise intolerable to you. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, exactly. They actually closed the window in my face and didn't even finish the, you know, I was putting mail through and filing case through with, matter of fact, it was the United States Supreme Court we were filing on to. And so I never got them all out that day. Had to get it back another time. But I did talk with the postmaster since, and he was really upset with these people working for him. So I'm thinking about what I'm going to do. I don't want to be vengeful on the one hand, but on the other hand, they got to stop. So I think I'm considering to continue to go forward with it.
So we're going to keep the people informed, Joe Barton. And do you want to say a kind word or two for Felicia and your radio show on Woodstock 104.1 FM?
Oh, yeah. If anybody wants to listen, in fact, I do a show at Monday nights at 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock on 104.1 FM. It's replayed.
I record Joe's show. So if National Liberty Alliance is keeping up with John, I can record some of those shows and put them on DVDs. And if anybody's interested, they can reach out to you. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But go ahead, Joe.
That's okay. Can you get Joe? Can you get that that station on the internet? Because I know a lot of radio stations you should be able to track down the radio
station.
No, they
don't go on the internet, but it. It broadcasts very far. It's all of Ulster County. It goes into Sullivan County a bit, and into I think some into Orange, and it broadcasts pretty far.
Pretty big area.
Well, when you rebroadcast it, do you put it on MP3? I wonder, can we just put it on our site where people could click on it the next day or days later? We could have a page for Joe.
I can do that for you.
Yeah, because I think that would be a better way of getting it out, because people come to NLA anyway and they go listen to it, and that makes it much easier for them.
The reason why it's important is because we work really hard to cite Supreme Court rulings and statutes, and so we're trying to educate people. But this Joe Barton's mask case is very important to all of us. He stands a good chance of prevailing. Actually, the law will prevail. It's not Joe Barton. It's the law that will prevail. And anybody else who's being victimized by being threatened or harassed with, if you don't wear a mask, we're going to criminally prosecute you, needs to pay attention. So we all need to support Joe Barton's mask case. He will lay the case law foundation for anyone else who's wrongfully maliciously prosecuted. This is malicious prosecution and abusive process. They're using the court system as a weapon to hurt people, which, is the theme that John is trying to address, because in case after case after case, let me share with you a pearl of wisdom that Joe and I discovered as we were working diligently on this case, because everybody can use this. Whether you're in family court, landlord-tenant court, criminal court, I don't care, this does not apply to federal courts, I'm sorry. This applies to New York State courts. Many people would like to write complaints to the Judicial Commission about their judge either being incompetent, incapable, incapacitated or just downright malicious in breaking the law. And usually we're like, yeah, the judicial conference isn't going to do anything. But if that's true, if you write a complaint to the judicial conference that your judge is breaking the law, acting maliciously, or is incompetent or incapable, and the judicial conference rules against you or doesn't allow the law to prevail, doesn't allow statute to prevail, what we discovered in our diligent study is that you can take that adverse determination and as of right, according to the New York State Constitution, Section 22D, Article 6, Section 22D, you can take that adverse determination straight to the highest court, the New York Court of Appeals, as of right, and they must review the judicial conference's determination. Now, I know one of my court watchers, we have an informal group of people who will go to court and fill out affidavits. In California, Court Watchers Group did this consistently and got a judge removed from the bench for defying the law with acts of impunity. Joe has some good experience with how Court Watchers put a stop to a malicious prosecution in his case, in some of his cases. But one of my court watchers wrote a complaint in his case to the judicial conference, got an adverse determination, and just said, well, you know, so now what? And didn't realize that he could take that adverse determination straight to the New York Court of Appeals, the highest court in New York State as of right. And they must allow the law to prevail because one of the special jobs of the New York State Court of Appeals is to set policy for the rest of the state. So go ahead, highest court in New York State, set policy for the rest of the state that it's acceptable for judges to break the law. Go ahead, because once you do that, you're a step away from the United States Supreme Court to hold them in criminal contempt. You don't go ask for a writ of certiorari. I don't need a review. The Supreme Court has already spoken in case after case after case after case. Cooper versus Aaron, judge violates his oath. He loses authority. He loses immunity. You have a Cooper versus Aaron violation. And you ask the Supreme Court to hold these traitors, because that's what they are, in criminal contempt of Supreme Court rulings. And so that's, you know, that's what Joe and I, we found a path now where you don't go for certiorari. You don't ask the Supreme Court to answer questions it's already answered in case after case after case. And very quickly, because it's 9:52, and Joe has his own radio program on Woodstock 104.1 FM to do in about 7 minutes. One of the Supreme Court cases that Joe was reaching for was Kelly versus U.S., and that's also known as the Bridgegate case. Everybody, please go learn that case, because what the Supreme Court has said in that case to Mr. Prosecutor Mark Coyne in the Third Circuit is you've taken a statute, that statute does not apply, you've misapplied a statute, you've violated statute, and we're not putting Miss Kelly and her two co-defendants in jail. And so now, in another case that I can cite too, Mark Coyne has violated statute, misapplied statute again, and he's going to hear from the Supreme Court. Because Mark Coyne, when you lose authority, when you violate statute, these people just can't break the law and go on as if nothing happened, especially when violating the law with acts of impunity speaks to constitutional violations, violating your due process rights, violating your right to be heard. In federal court, you probably want to look at the statute 28 U.S.C. 1654, your right to be heard, which is a descriptive statute of your constitutionally protected and guaranteed right to due process. So that being said, our pearl of wisdom for anybody who's fighting in these corrupt courts in New York State, complain about your judge. Please do, in nauseating detail, and cite statute after statute after statute and law after law after law and case after case after case that they violated that they stand with that they've broken the law, and bring it to the judicial conference, the judicial committee in New York, and if they dare not allow the law to prevail or statute to prevail, then you can go straight to the highest court. You don't have to pay any filing fees. You don't have to perfect an appeal. You don't have to be dragged through the litigation quagmire so that they can wage a war of attrition against you. You go straight to the highest court, New York State Court of Appeals, and have them spin on you. And then in one step, you're at the United States Supreme Court. So this is what Joe Barton is doing, and we all need to support him, because you may have to follow in his footsteps.
Okay, thank you, Lydia. Joe, do you have anything to bring up before we end the conversation?
Yes. Well,
Rod,
I
guess
you
wanted to respond.
Lydia did.
Rod wanted to say something, too.
You can jump right from the judicial review straight to the highest court without going through all the other little courts. But you got to file with the Judicial Review Commission.
And, Joe, you did that, right?
Yeah, I did that. I'm still waiting to hear back from them. But,
see, Joe set up his case so nicely.
That's great.
Maybe you should write them again and remind them, Joe.
Yeah, and I want to back it up with more law. I'm going to do that.
That would be the New York State Constitution, Article 6, Section 22D, that says you can go straight to the highest court. So maybe, Joe, maybe you would want to send the judicial conference in New York a reminder of the New York State Constitution, and complain about your judge some more, because you're in perfect adherence to the law. You're not breaking the law. It's the judge and the prosecutor.
On top of that, the town court that's being heard, it is not a court of record according to law here in New York State. So again, that is a problem, and he could move it over to the Supreme Court immediately.
Well, I already told them they didn't have jurisdiction. But she threatened me if I didn't come back that she was going to put out an arrest warrant, which is also a violation of the law. But anyway, I have to go because I have to do a
sounds
my
like
radio.
Sounds like terrorism to me.
Yeah.
All right, Joe. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Amongst a lot of other stuff, what they don't realize is all these little actors that facilitate this, like the police. I mean, I know we don't want to beat on the police, but you know, everybody that participates in that is liable also. You know, that's like in Nuremberg when they had the trials and the soldiers that they told to shoot the innocent prisoners, they said, we were following orders. They said, well, you can't follow an order like that. So everybody that put the sign up on the register, guess what? They helped break the law, too. They're culpable. I'm not saying that he should go after them, but he could if he wanted to.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Okay.
Good night, Joe. Thanks,
bye.
Lydia.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, Gerard, you got the board here. Why don't you take the next, the first question, because I know Brent's not in yet. If Brent shows up, let us know.
Yeah.
Let's take some questions, Gerard.
Okay. Looks like Kevin from New York is on the top of the list here. Go ahead, Kevin. You've been unmuted.
Yep, it's back to the government guy consent book.
That's
yep.
For
progress
you.
Yep, I got a call into them, and they haven't even returned my call. They're making an appointment, so until then, you know, this is a new experience for me, and they don't seem to want to talk to nobody. They have to have meetings, and they have to have appointments, so I'm waiting for my appointment. So,
okay, February sometime?
Well, it is February now, and we're at the end. I doubt it. I mean, they're supposed to... I'm a little upset because they were supposed to have finished off their work by the end of last month. Well, let me think. January, yes. Because I responded back. When they made the corrections and edited the book, they got it back to me, and I got it back within 1 week to them. And they agreed that it would only be 4 to 6 weeks, and that would have brought us into the very first week of February or sometime in January. And I called them up, early on in the month to see, I need it back. Because they were formatting. That's all they're doing right now is formatting the book and putting different things in there that I had originally as far as, you know, some pictures or diagrams or things like that. And so I'm just waiting on that. And until they format it. Now, once they format it,
you know, I'll probably spend a couple of days to go through it and, you know, thumb through the book and make sure that everything looks good. Have a final say on it before going to print. And then it'll go to print, and I'm sure that'll take a couple of weeks at least to get that into the print. So, again, until I talk with them again, I don't know anything. And I did put a call in this week and haven't heard, not this week, but last week, actually. But I haven't heard anything yet. They're supposed to get back to me with an appointment.
Okay, thank you.
But they are a pretty big company, so I'm kind of surprised. I think I'm going to call tomorrow and file a complaint. You know, Dorian's, so they've been around for quite some time, and you know, they've been around.
They got an excuse, though. They got COVID. We're operating with a smaller staff and lesser hours and all. Nobody wants to do anything today with this COVID. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, it's a
all
big
right,
excuse.
Thank you.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay. That was Kevin. I got another Kevin. That's probably a different Kevin, but go ahead. I'm going to unmute you. You're unmuted. You got, you're echoing there somehow. Kevin.
Yeah, it's the same Kevin. I got you on both sides here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Very good.
And anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1.
Okay, so I'm going to go for Barbara then. Barbara,
hi.
You've been on mute. Hi.
Hi, thanks, Gerard. This is Barbara from New York. I wanted to comment because the charge of trespassing, I thought was interesting because I did some reading on, no, I listened to, it was a seminar given by Children's Health Defense, which is Robert F. Kennedy's group.
Yeah.
And and Mary Holland talked for a while. She was really interesting. She's the resident lawyer there. And a guy who started a group for New York State teachers. So they want to not have any mandated COVID tests or vaccinations. And there was a case called Aville versus de Blasio. And the parents, like three parents, were the plaintiffs, and they said, they said that the teachers are not our children's doctors. They had their own doctors do the COVID test, and when the parents took the test and their kids to the school, they said, this is no good, we have to do it, you're trespassing. I think they won the case, and then maybe there was an appeal, I don't know, but I thought that was she said, can you believe this? They actually charged them with trespassing, and they still would not allow the students to participate. They had to go home and learn remotely because they were giving the test from an outside doctor as opposed to letting, you know, having the local, you know, people at the school do it, which I think is unbelievable. And then I wanted to bring up another thing from the seminar. She said that there's something called 21 USC 360 BBB, and I looked it up. It's pretty much what she said it was, although I couldn't read everything into it. It said that if a procedure, either a vaccine, well, this didn't say it, but anything that was emergency authorization only, it is subject to consent or refusal. It cannot, by law, be mandated. And in the, I read the case associated with it, and it said that it's a violation. Well, whoever wrote up the case said it's a violation of federal law to mandate an EUA, emergency use authorization procedure. So both the COVID test and the vaccine are only EUA. They're not, the FDA has only authorized the test and the COVID test and the two vaccines, Merck and Pfizer, they have not approved them. They have not licensed them. So Mary Holland said it's against the federal law to mandate them. So I don't know. I looked it up in the code, and it's pretty much what she said, except I don't see it saying, having the words not subject to mandating, which I wish it said. That's the key part for me. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
No, they definitely cannot mandate them, and there's a couple of reasons why, and that's also the reason they always go to a statute like trespassing, because they have that statute written. There is no statute or law on any of these things, whether it be the mask or the vaccine. Now, the vaccine's even worse, because the vaccine is an experimental procedure. It's never been tested, and it falls under the Nuremberg Code, because in Nuremberg, in the camps, they were doing medical testing and experimental procedures, and they wrote that into the law that they're not allowed to force you to do any experimental procedures.
Yeah.
And that stands today. And when you go to get this shot, they have to get your permission, signed permission, and they have to tell you that it's experimental.
But
and if they're
don't,
not doing
so you don't,
both,
they aren't
well,
doing
that's
that.
That. Well, let me tell you
Are
why.
They?
Every doctor, every nurse that gives this shot that doesn't do that, she's as liable as the rest of them.
Yep.
They're all going to be tried for treason because and they're all going to be tried for the violation of that Nuremberg Code law, whatever that was that we signed with all the countries. It's an international law or whatever. We all signed on to it. It's in America. It's in all these countries. So they cannot make it mandatory, and they know they can't make it mandatory. And that's why what they're going to do is they're going to make it so that you can't ride the bus or do this or go to school.
Oh.
I mean, you know.
Exactly. It said
in... Bear in mind, we don't... The statutes are not written for us. It's written for them. We can use statutes in a court, you know, codes, statutes, and even their regulations that control them. We can use that in court if we're dealing with an individual that is working for the government, maybe law enforcement or some agency, and even someone else in commercial activities that violated something in the codes or regulations that they are to operate under. But they cannot apply them against us, you know. But I think we can go even further than that because they can't require even the people working in government agencies to take the necessary shot for this virus thing. But because that again would be a violation personally. But besides that, it would be unconstitutional. So, you know, there are some statutes that they do write, even though they may not apply it or direct it towards the people, but they might apply it and direct it towards the individuals who are working for the agencies or operating some commercial activity in the case of federal interstate. But they can't apply things that are unconstitutional to those people as well as to us. But it's unconstitutional for them to even try to apply a statute to us at all.
What they do it every day, so.
Yeah, they do what they want. They make the law up as they go. They don't even abide by their own laws and rules. So, you know.
Well, that's what this is. They're looking for a statute. Now, whether or not it can be applied to you or not, they still need something to hang their hat on.
Well, they think it can because they already think that an executive order applies to the people. I mean, that's how bad. And shame on us because the people believe it, and it's time for the people to wake up. And we've got to get the message out to people what the true law is. And the law of the land is, as far as any law to be applied upon the people, is natural law. Period. No man-made law, no legislative law can be applied upon the people.
Yeah, we it's time for civic action with this stuff. Time for people to band together and say enough is enough.
Mm-hmm. This court
case, I believe it said in the text that you cannot, for an experimental procedure, they call it investigational and experimental. All these words have legal meanings. You cannot say that these vaccines are safe and effective. Safe and effective has a precise legal meaning. These vaccines are not safe and effective, and I know exactly what effective means. It creates a negative reaction in your body. Your body rejects it, has a reaction to it. That's what that is the definition in the industry for effective. So they tell the people it's effective, And they also tell them it's safe. No, safe is something that is not experimental and not investigational. That by law, these vaccines, they aren't vaccines, they aren't legally vaccines. That's the first lie. The second lie is they are not safe according to the legal definition. They are experimental and investigational according to the legal, you know, words. And also, I think it said in this court case that for an experimental investigational procedure, you cannot deny someone an activity like going to school. I guess you could also apply the 14th Amendment. I don't know, but to keep telling people, no, you cannot participate, you cannot go in the store, you cannot do all these things for experimental, only authorized, not approved. No.
I got news for you. The regular vaccines are not safe and effective. They've never been tested.
Yes, exactly.
There's
exactly,
no double-blind test. They're basically still an experiment as far as
I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. So, when they say you got to have these 60 shots in order to go to school, that's all bull. That's all never been proven, never been tested. And they were supposed to update every 5 years, and they haven't done it once. They were supposed to go through and say that.
Oh, right, exactly.
And the efficacy of the vaccine, there's not one test since the beginning of this nightmare. So we need to end it.
I'm going to call the hospital that I was involved with my son and give them, ask them how to do a freedom. I don't know if they have a form for a Freedom of Information Act, because I want to know exactly what was involved with this COVID test, if it had something on the swab, because they need to let people know if they're putting something on the swab. I don't know how easy that's going to be, but I don't see why. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that?
If they're putting anything dangerous in, and they are, I mean, or often they'll put mercury into some of these things. But
onto a swab for a test?
Well, no, she's talking about the swabs.
Or the injections.
But that doesn't mean
that they didn't put anything that they're not recording into those injections and maybe even the swab. Because we can't trust them. They cannot be trusted. They're untrustworthy.
No, they can't.
And
absolutely.
Look, they have turned the world, and it's taken time. I look back when I was younger and whatever conscious I had at that time. I was very young, especially in the 50s and 60s. But I look back, common sense was obvious. When someone did something wrong or someone said something or this or that and someone brought in common sense, everybody just shut up because it's the truth.
Right.
Common sense ultimately is, the rules of common law. It's part of common law. It's maxims. Common law is a series of maxims and controls the courts. That which is true and cannot be denied. Now, you make certain arguments, and I've heard some statements made here, that's common sense. Like, to say, for instance, that someone was trespassing in the school, with their child. I mean, that's so absurd.
Yeah.
It's to walk away and say, and shake your head, and then nobody defends it is a major problem. Everybody should get up in a rage on this. Everybody should make the point, because they're running courts of nonsense. They're running, the whole system is run on nonsense. And we need to get it back to common sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to go on to Rhonda from Florida. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello. How are y'all?
Good, good. How are you doing tonight?
By the way, Terry, if Brent comes in, let us know. But go ahead, Rhonda.
Okay. I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to say, especially while you were talking about vaccines, I have been reading some articles the last couple of days, and it really bothers me a lot with all the people out there that are in the hype and all the stuff that they're saying about how vaccines and everything are building up your immune system, and that it's the reaction that people have, whether they're mild, like, sore throat, body aches and all that, or just your body is adjusting to building up that immune system. and the vaccine. And that's really not like what I learned when I was in medicine. I mean, it's our body and the cells, like the T cells and all of that, that are the ones that make the immune system work. They go out and attack the viruses and all that. That's why we can hopefully deal with, you know, viruses and stuff like that. And then all the people that keep thinking that it's okay, that those reactions are normal, but they're really not normal. I mean, it's not normal to get injected with something or to get a virus or bacteria and say that, oh, well, body aches, you know, headaches, temperature, fever, that's all normal. That's just my body reacting to the organism. But really, those are things that, what do we think of? We think of those things as us being sick. And they're really adverse effects. Those are not normal things. And that's what they're saying over and over, that, oh, well, what reactions you're having to the vaccine are just normal. Those are never normal. I mean, articles I read don't refer to them as normal things. They refer to them as adverse effects, side effects, whatever you want to call them. They can be mild, you know, but they can be all the way up to severe. So it's just crazy.
How do they even know what's normal? Because, look, in normal herd immunity under normal conditions, we would get this virus out in the air, maybe get it from somebody else sneezing on us, and it would go through all the normal pathways, which is the mucus system up the nose, and the body would get it that way step by step, and it would mount an immune response. When you stick that needle in and you throw that virus into the blood, you just bypassed 3/4 of the immune system that it would have had to go through to get into the blood. So what's normal? How could you say anything? How do you know what's normal when you're not letting anybody do anything normal? And now they're even pointing out that viruses aren't viruses, that they're exosomes, and these are things that, like, you get whatever it is, whatever that protein is that we call a virus, and your body attacks it. It could be even a chemical or whatever that's in the environment, and what it does is it puts a cast around it and it coats it, and eventually it goes out the mucus system. Well, when that thing goes out and you sneeze and somebody else gets that particular thing, whatever it is, and we don't know what it is, it's a protein or what, right? But when you catch, when you get that, what you're getting is like a vaccination. It's even better than a vaccination because you have the original thing and it's in a weakened form. And that's how you get normal herd immunity, not by sticking a needle in and bypassing the whole immune system. So those things that they're calling viruses, those are not things that are going into the body. Those are things that the body already worked on and put a structure around it. And that's what they're seeing. Those are the things that your body, when that throwing off the virus, that's what they're catching and that's what they're looking at. Again, it's the age-old thing of looking at the effect rather than the cause. That's the trouble with modern medicine. They're working on effect and not causes.
Right, and that's what I'm saying, because when we start having fever and chills and whatever effects we have, we're having those effects not from our T cells and B cells and white cells and all that, but we're having effects because of whatever organism or thing that is causing us to be sick. So when they keep telling everybody, oh, this is all normal, these are normal. No, they're not. If people even read anything and didn't listen to all the propaganda they hear, they would understand that these are not normal things. These are side effects, adverse effects, that can range from not much to, you know, some people even dying. So they're not normal. I mean, I was never taught these are, quote, normal. And it really aggravates, annoys, and frustrates me that this is what people are being told, because that's all I hear from people on Facebook that have gotten the vaccination. And, oh, well, these are just normal things. My body's building up an immune reaction. I just sit there shaking my head like, no wonder.
I'll tell you how unnormal they are. I mean, it was bad enough that we were getting these vaccines that they were actually making from the pathogen and weakening it and putting it in. Those were bad enough. But this new vaccine, which alters your DNA, and what it does is it does, they're not putting, they have never distilled out the actual organism that they claim causes COVID-19. They've never seen it under a microscope. They've never distilled it out. And what they've done is they've done this RNA PCR thing. Which it does is it puts the protein of that particular virus, and it makes your body produce that virus. Now, in other words, the body's producing the COVID out of you, and then your body's supposed to mount an immune response to that protein, to the thing that they put in your DNA to make it seed your body with this virus and then give you immunity. Well, you know what that is? If your body's making something that your body's going to fight, that's an autoimmune disease. That's cancer. That's
why medicine calls sick disease illness, not normal.
So what happens is with this new vaccine, if it doesn't kill you outright, and believe me, they've had many, many, many deaths, they're not even talking about half of them, right outright from the shot. If you get through it without dying, or you could even get two shots and get not much symptoms, but what you don't realize, and this is what's coming, folks, because we've put this nightmare on us and we're going to suffer for it. Within 2 years, you're going to come into contact with the wild virus. And it's called pathogenic priming. So what happened is your body's all primed up with this pathogen so that when you come in contact with the wild virus, your body will start replicating that vaccine they put in, and you will get a cytostorm, an immune system response that will kill you with cardiopulmonary, and you'll die. And it's 100%. So a year to 2 years down the road, I don't know how many 100,000 people have been injected with this vaccine. They're going to start dropping dead. And I hate to scare people, but you know what? You should have been scared before you took it. So
yeah,
I don't. And there's no way to reverse it that I know. Because they're messing with your DNA. It's not like it's a heavy metal that you can chelate out or anything like that. This is insidious. This is ridiculous. This is from hell. Only Satan could come up with something like this. And it's definitely the mark of the beast, because they're going to be able to tell that you have it in you. They have a piece of it that they put in that they call Luciferian. It's a light, and it can be read with your phone. So at the injection site, you're going to have this pad with little needles, and it's going to, this luciferase is going to create a light that can be read under, you know, I don't know if it's infrared, but your phone will be able to read it. And that's how they're going to control us. They're going to know where you are, what you're doing, and everything that you're doing through this vaccine. This is something that they haven't talked about, but it's what the New World Order wants. And it fits the mark of the beast so perfectly, it's ridiculous, you know, that you can't buy and you can't sell without it, you know, basically. That's what they're going for, right? And plus, it's going to kill you. It's population control. Oh, the other thing is it's going to cause sterility. Anybody that got that shot, I hope you don't plan on having kids anytime in the next 2 years, besides the fact you'll probably be dead. You know, you're going to go sterile, because that was the Bill Gates portion of it, to make people sterile. That's what he did, experimented on the Africans with, because that's who they targeted first, because those are groups that they want out of this world, that they're less than cattle. They're like a virus on the earth, and they want to cull them with their eugenics. They want to get rid of them.
Are there two lines of these vaccines? In other words, the ones that that Trump was ordered to have done, and they went through that process.
I heard.
Or are they just taking that and adding stuff to it?
You know what? I heard that there was a line of vaccines that didn't have the DNA altering in it that I just described, which is going to.
Do we know when that came out?
Well, I don't know when or what. All I know is I've heard rumors. I can't confirm it. You know, at this point, I haven't seen enough evidence to say, yeah, that's true. You know, it could be a Trump apologist, you know, because he's going to take a black eye for this one, because he listened to his advisors, and, you know, he believed what they told him.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I mean, I would imagine that the vaccine wasn't planned, of course, to have anything crazy in it, but to try to deal with the problem that really didn't exist anyway. But,
what do you mean? They've been planning this for many, many years, 30 years.
I understand that, but Trump escalated it, got it through quickly, and you know.
Well,
he
got them the exemption from doing the FDA testing.
Well, I think he sped it up, is what he did. I don't know that he really bypassed any testing. Maybe
they bypassed all the testing. They bypassed
something had to have taken place that it took so long.
No. There is no testing, and they purposely didn't want testing. Listen, this is a coronavirus. This is the common cold. It's influenza A and influenza B. They're all corona. They give it a name. That's how they work, through fear. Every time they try to make a vaccine for the common cold. For influenza A, influenza. Look, you go get your flu shot every year, and there's eight. It mutates, and they never know which one is really going to prevail. So you could be getting a shot of something that's not going to work at all. They have no idea.
Well,
it's a shot in the dark.
I agree with you.
Let me finish the science here, John. Listen, whenever they tried to make this vaccine, they use cats and ferrets, and the reason they use cats and ferrets is because cats and ferrets are highly susceptible to this pneumonia that kills everybody that they call like COVID-19. They never got past the cats and ferrets because all the animals died. So when this vaccine came out, they skipped the testing. They knew it was going to kill everybody. It's the same. It's a coronavirus vaccine. Besides the fact that now they do a PCR, which has never been used on anything, on animals or humans, this thing that alters the DNA. But I'm just a regular corona flu A and B. They've never been able to make a vaccine with this PCR crap that they're using with the DNA that didn't kill the test subjects, and they didn't do any testing. So, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen? I mean, it kills cats and ferrets. So,
well, again, I don't disagree with you on this because I don't have any knowledge because I haven't had the time to look into it, so I have to really rely on others. But look, I don't believe in pharmaceuticals anyway. I take no pharmaceuticals. The pharmaceutical companies are out there making money. They're one of the most evil groups. It's hard to say which is more evil, but they are very evil. The purpose and what they're doing is all about money, ultimately. They don't solve any problems. They just continue to create more problems. You know, I see people who get treated do far worse. I've heard about this, and I see it for myself now, even in my own life, in my own health. People who stay away from pharmaceuticals completely and as much as possible versus people, you know, who take those things, they don't fare out very well. Especially people with heart conditions, diabetes, that kind of stuff. I mean, they go through all kinds of problems and suffering, and they never get better, and they die. Where people who don't participate with those things, maybe work with you know things that are natural, vitamins and supplements and different things of that nature, they seem to fare out a lot better. Yeah, I don't trust the pharmaceutical companies one iota, and whatever they say they're putting in it, I wouldn't trust that they're not putting anything else in it, because they probably are, in my opinion. They've come to the end of their rope, and when I say they, I'm talking about the deep state. They've pulled all plugs. I mean, they know they don't have a second shot at this. They know at some point the people, if they don't act quickly and tie down the noose of communism in this country, within a year or two, not 4 years, within a year or two, they know they're going to lose it all. And they're operating very quickly. They got their hands in the controls, so they control everything. At least they seem to do that. And that's why they're doing crazy things. I mean, they're turning over everything Trump has done, all the good stuff and things that people are losing their jobs, and so there's economic problems. I mean, all kinds of things they're turning over. And going back, trying to reset things, and push the envelope. With another 8-year plan, they're pushing it, in my opinion, to a 1 or a 2-year plan. So it's really serious and it's a problem. But on the other side of things, let's look for some good news. There's no doubt in my mind or heart that there is a military plan going on here, and that justice will prevail. And I don't think it's going to be that much longer, but it could still be months away, unfortunately.
I have 4 quick comments on what y'all said. You're right about the major drug companies, but you have to remember and understand that it's not just what they do, because that's what they do. They make drugs. It's the fact that when you go to medical school, physician assistant school, whatever, NP program or something like that, you learn about, well, lifestyle measures. That's almost like theory. Many, many providers don't address them because you're taught to prescribe. You have an overseeing board, whether it's the AAPA, AMA, the National Nursing Board, whatever it is, overseeing you, and they expect, like veterinarians too, they expect that you prescribe. And people have to remember that drugs never fix or cure. I don't know anything I was ever taught about that they fix or cure. They treat the symptoms. That's what they do. They treat the symptoms. That's what we were taught. That's what they do. I mean, that's basically what they do. And the second thing is messenger RNA or mRNA. They code and they code for proteins. Those proteins are the things in our bodies that tell the cell what to do. So if you have something injected or however you get into your body that interrupts what a specific protein is coded for, then yes, you can have negative effects depending on what that protein now is going to code for. That's the second thing. The other thing is, it's interesting you're talking about vaccine being a control for fertility, because actually I just read this evening an article that was dated back in 1992 from the Journal of International Parapharmacology or Immunopharmacology, and it was about how they were developing. Back in 1992, they were studying how to make vaccines that control the fertility in the form of, they were related to cancer, but still, they were learning how to do that way back then. And many people understand and know that in animals, there are vaccines that actually do that, that do control that and stop that process or alter it in some way. The last thing is, we all need to remember that we have millions and millions of viruses in our body, so in bacteria. So if we're going to be afraid of something like whatever COVID is or something else, probably we might want to start being really worried about the organisms within us. We have staph, strep, and a whole list of other things that cause even worse disease. And at any moment, we get more sick from them and die from them than what people are dying from COVID. I know a lot of people that they're accepting of the COVID rules and all that, and what's going on, would say that this is conspiracy theory, but that's fact. I mean, that's just fact. But people don't think. People believe what they are told and what they're listening to. So.
Right. I don't know. Okay, thank you. And I could go on and on and on with this because we're just scratching the surface, you know what I mean? And this is kind of my forte with all this health business, you know, as far as what the doctors are working on, where they're treating symptoms instead of causes. And basically that's the pharmaceutical companies, because that's who's telling the doctors what to do. These salesmen come in with their wares and they get the doctors to give these medicines, and they buy them trips and whatever else they got to do to convince them. And they basically tell them and teach them these procedures. These are salesmen. They're not doctors. They haven't been in the medical school.
When they come in, they bring wine, they bring nice cloth, they bring all kinds of things as,
right,
quote, rewards.
Anyway, look, they got some pretty fantastic drugs. I'll give them that. But generally speaking, if you have high blood pressure, diabetes, or anything like that, and you go to the what I call the allopathic doctor, he's going to,
right,
you'll be able to extend your life maybe 10 years if you're lucky. You know, if you take your insulin, you'd be a good boy, you know what I mean, and you do what they tell you to do, you might get 10 years. But those 10 years are not going to be trouble-free, and you're going to slowly deteriorate. They have a horrible track record with chronic disease. They're very good with emergency medicine and sewing limbs back on and all that stuff, you know. But with chronic disease, they don't want us to heal. And they don't want, and any, if, you know, God forbid somebody finds a plant or something that will cure cancer or anything else, if they can't reproduce it in a lab and patent it, they hide it. They can it because it's not any money for them. And there are lots and lots of these things out there. That's right.
And that's why, and, you know, if only people would remember medications, vaccines, not cures. They don't fix anything, whether your doctor tells you it can cure you or fix you.
No, it's your immune system.
You know, but, you know, that's unfortunately the way it's been for so long, and it's just been worse. But there are providers out there that really are trying and
You see these doctors now, they're going into alternative stuff because they're starting to realize that, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, they see the results of the medicine that they're doing, and it's very disheartening to watch people die that you're trying to help, you know.
I know that were on blood pressure medicine or hypertension medication, they were never on one. Most of them were on two and three, and their blood pressure never got to a level most of the time where it maintained. They never maintain. And then a lot of times they're thrown and put on Lasix and all kinds of other things.
And you know, they've never tested these medicines to be used together. Sometimes they test two of them together. They've never even tested three of them together. And they got people on 5, 6, 7 medicines together, which means you don't know what the hell they're going to do. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Other part of the problem is that most people come in and they want a pill. They want something to fix.
Right,
most people don't want to change and do what they need to do.
No, and if they give you a pill, generally speaking, you go home, you feel better. That's the placebo effect. They should study that instead of studying the medicine. It is the placebo effect.
Yeah,
they cure
I
stuff because your mind is telling you you're better. Right.
You
mind over matter.
Drug studies and things that you have to do for your courses, but, you know, when you're going through rotations and all, I went to an internal medicine when I was in school, and physician that was in the DL program, and her fourth year was in the room, and my blood pressure was a little bit high, so I had never done anything. I wasn't eating right, all that stuff. The short story is that the doctor hands me a script. In fact, I'm thinking, I'm not going to take this. I mean, I'm too stressed, blah, 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 blah. So I turned to the fourth year and said, well, why isn't she didn't address lifestyle measures? Is that what my PA program talks to us about? And the fourth year said, well, if my attendee hadn't been in the room, I might have said that to you. My head like, okay, there you go.
Yeah, well, you know. And people are waking up, so hopefully it'll get better, you know.
Hopefully, well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Rhonda.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We got Mr. or Miss Anonymous. You've been unmuted.
Hello, Sean.
Hey, what are you doing, Ollie? How's it going?
I got a quick question for John. Is John still on?
He's in the background somewhere. Go ahead, ask it.
Okay.
He's listening.
Okay, 3 or 4 weeks ago, a video came out of Ireland, and a gal over there sent a FOIA request to the ones involved asking for scientific proof that the pandemic actually exists, and another one asking for scientific proof that masks do work. Okay, they couldn't provide either one. Now, right now, the New York legislature has got Cuomo on the ropes. Now, John, my question is this. Couldn't you write some papers basically asking or demanding for the same proof in both cases?
We know they don't have that. I don't know if John, where John is probably off somewhere.
I had walked away from the computer for a moment. I just got fell into that. What was the question?
They had, in Ireland, they had this just reporter that, or whoever she was, she FOIA requested the testing to see, you know, if they had actually ever got the virus. And she also FOIA requested to show the studies that masks work. So she went after the vaccine with a FOIA request. Show me where you've distilled this pathogen out, where you could actually look at it and work on it, and show me the studies that say that masks are, that they work. They could not provide her with either one of those. They don't have them. There's no studies that prove them. And I'll go even further and say that there's studies that say that masks make things worse, because we already know that. At the turn of the century, during the pandemics, when they started wearing masks, people started getting, it increased the cases by 1,000-fold, because they weren't using sterile procedure, and the mask becomes like a petri dish on your face, and then you touch the mask, and you touch, so you, it makes spreading worse. That's what people don't understand.
Well,
you know,
one of the other problems that we have ultimately is that we've all become trained this way until we start to realize and we start to make a change, and we see it constantly. You never get the truth of what takes place. You always get an interpretation of what takes place. I mean, look at the law. You search some things on the law on the internet, and you'll get to some paper written by some lawyer giving an opinion. You know, who cares about the opinion? Let's look at the law. Let's see if we can't understand it. If it doesn't make sense and common sense, then it should be no law at all to begin with. It should be understood by, you know, the average person. I mean, bear in mind there are certain, you know, words, language, you know, that we use to say certain things in a court, you know, in certain meanings, you know, different kinds of court cases to begin with, maybe a habeas corpus or writing a paper, a memorandum, and different things that people may not be, you know, normally aware of, but those are simple things. And let me give an example, and I think this is a big, big problem in the medical system, in my opinion. Anybody listen to John Bergman? Okay, he's on YouTube, and as far as I know, they haven't taken him down, but I haven't checked him out in a while. But he used to always come on, and he'd read some of the research and the conclusions that were obvious in the research, and then you'd get the opinion and the final statement made by the drug company. It says the exact opposite. Okay, so unless you're digging down into the sources. And, of course, you're going to have some understanding of medical things, you know, terms and so on, to be able to understand it. You're not going to understand it. And doctors, they don't seem to go to look often on what exactly the reports. They go to get the shortcut, the short answer, you know, the overview by whoever is interpreting it. And that's true not only in the medical field, it's true in the law, and it's true in everything else that makes that offers us any kind of, anything for our life. They twist things around, and we have been trained not to look for the source. We hear something, sounds good to us, or whatever it is, and then we repeat it, and the lie just goes on and on and on.
Well, Ollie's question is that the fact that what happened in Ireland, and I think you're going to get the same results here, is... Couldn't you send a FOIA request in to Cuomo, to the New York State, since Cuomo is on the ropes, asking, show us the studies that show that mask work. Show us the studies that you've actually, that this virus is real, that you actually have isolated it. And they have it, and they will not be able to show you that.
Well, again, you know, even to approach that, a little bit of research is required. You know, who exactly are we going to direct this to, who are we going to go after to? You know, there are, of course...
The CDC, the Board of Health, New York State Board of Health.
That's where we start.
The ones who's making, saying the statute, you say, I want to see what you base this statute on. Show me the studies that made you write this law.
Again, let me get to the point. If we were to try to write a paper, we would need somebody who can put all the lingo and the language together, all the details, the facts, and then...
Well, she already did it for you in Ireland. You copy her paper and send it to them.
And I could write the law, but, well, again, I don't know what the paper looks like. I don't know whether they're coming into the common law or what. I mean, there are statutes we could apply with this.
Well, what's a Freedom of Information Act is a statutory thing, is it not?
Well, again, you know, you're going up against the medical field, but, yeah, they are controlled by statute, so yes.
No, you're not going up against the medical field. You're going up against politicians that are telling you.
I just revealed my ignorance to the point that I'm trying to make. Not on purpose.
Okay, John.
But my ignorance. My point is this, is I could not sit down and write and articulate a paper that I would know how to speak. I would know the law side of it. I would be able to take the language of the facts. Give me the facts. Look, when we do any papers, all I want is the facts. Because once I understand the facts, I can apply what I understand as the law and whatever statutes we can apply.
So that's what that FOIA request is. Give me
but
the
again,
facts.
That's where we would need to...
Hello, Gerard.
Yeah, go ahead. Ollie.
John, my question was this. Couldn't you write papers to the governor, the DOJ, and that medical association asking or demanding scientific proof that the pandemic actually exists and that the masks actually worked?
Well, I'll tell you what I believe I would get is just silence. That's what they always look. You go to a court, you talk to a judge, what do you get? Silence. Okay? They never answer anything you say. They never respond to a motion, nothing. It has gotten that bad. At least 20 years ago, you might have gotten through the wall a little bit. I don't think there's any difference here. And I do understand, when we go into an issue, you've got to get the facts. I don't have the facts. So someone has to bring the facts, lay it out, give me the facts, then I can take the facts and insert it into a paper to, you know, to take into law. But again, at this point, it would have to begin with a request. And I don't think you'd do a FOIA request. Unless you're dealing to the government directly in this case, then, other than that, it would be a request. And in their failure to request, then you'd go into the courts and you'd try to make your case that they had then demand the response. So this is public information. They're controlled by, codes and regulations within their own business. And this is public information. We're putting things in our bodies, whatever the case may be. And so you can make a case. Is that going to go anywhere? I don't think so. I don't think it'll, again, I get back to the same thing I say all the time. We're not going to get justice until we get to the other side. And I got to tell you, my time in my little world that I live in is totally, totally consumed by papers and books. I'm writing handbooks. I'm rewriting the sheriff's handbooks. I'm rewriting a lot of books, and I'm writing new books, new handbooks. There's probably about 5 or 6 handbooks that need to be written, and I'm working on all of them. In order to address the details and the process and the procedures and the necessary knowledge and the necessary mindsets that people would need in whatever it is they're doing. You're going to become a committee man, you're going to get on a grand jury as a jurist, or you're going to be a jury administrator, and so on. There's numerous books, and of course this book I'm working on, and then the papers that we have in, I'm working with Jim. My point I'm trying to say is I got to stay on point on the big projects, because the big projects are going to solve all these little things, because all these other things we can address after we get courts of justice, and I think we're very close to that. But I don't have a magic ball to look in, so I can't say a crystal, but I can say but I think we're close. And what we do need though. We do need people to assist. Matter of fact, I'm getting ready to put out an email to people shortly that people want to work on me with these kind of things.
Let me tell you, there's lots of people out there that have filled out FOIA requests, John. School board people and all that. And they know, and there's nothing wrong with putting a FOIA request in on what they made their decision on, because they have to answer you within so many days. Now, this woman in Ireland, they basically answered her saying, "We don't have any information," which means that they didn't have it. So, in other words, in law, that's acquiescence. So,
the question is, can I write a paper? And the answer is, I can write the paper, if I have someone to assist me in doing the research necessary to put the paper together. Just going and getting those papers is a research. That information is research, and getting it factually, that's number one. The second thing is priority. do I put handbooks aside? Do I put other things aside?
No, no, no. I don't think so. I think that this is something that you could put off on other people because it's not that complicated.
Exactly. And, I can oversee it is what I think.
Right. And Judicial Watch had a recent... Judicial Watch won something where he FOIA requested, and remember they wouldn't answer him, and they wouldn't answer him, and they wouldn't answer him. Remember Judicial Watch recently FOIA requested information from this, the Congress.
Yeah.
And I think they finally came through, and they proved him right. Now, my point is they came through to this lady in Ireland, and they said, we don't have it. The question is so now what? So they admitted they don't have it, and everybody should know that means that it's a scam, that they have no information. They're operating on baloney. That just like social distancing and masks, it's all baloney. Never been proven. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what do you do about that? The only thing you can do about it is disseminate the information so everybody has it. You know? I don't know. I mean, this woman, they gave her that information, but what's she going to do with that information? I mean, then do you file a case telling them to cease and desist because they have no evidence that this works? I mean, if they come out and they say, you got to come out of your house every day at such and such a time, bend down, pick this thing up, throw it over your head, and then rebury it in the ground, would you do it? And they said, if you don't do it, we're going to throw you in jail. So then you keep doing it, and then eventually you put a FOIA request in, show me the proof that does means anything. And so then they come back and say, we don't have any proof that means anything. Now what do you do? Now you have to do a separate case to go after them, right?
Again, you know, I'll...
That just opens the door to more litigation.
We've lost our common sense. They get away with this because even we, the people, have lost our common sense. We scratch our heads and don't do nothing about it. And even with that, we question ourselves. That's what we do. Look, truth is truth. Okay, and it cannot be denied. And when you lay out something that is injurious to people, you know, it's an injury. It's obvious. And so a lot of us, these problems really, we to an extent we paused upon ourselves. But remember, we went to their school system. We've been trained not to think, but what to think. More so today than yesterday, maybe. But that's the process, and the narratives of all of the news medias, they reinforce it, and whatever you know, entertainment is out there, they reinforce it. Music reinforces it, and we believe the big fictional lie, and that's it. And that's true with everything. But yeah, look, there's a lot more we can do if we have more people working with us. We need people who have some experience and an ability to do research and also maybe to understand writing papers and how the process works and how to write a paper. We need help with that. And without that, we have to just stay on point. We have more important things to focus in so we can win the war. And the unfortunate thing is that we'll suffer with all these things as we continue fighting this war. But look at Agenda 21. There's a lot of energy going into trying to fight that and defeat it. Without getting the courts of justice, we will never defeat Agenda 21. It'll continue to go forward. But once we get justice, it's a no-brainer. It could be won overnight. But we have to have a court that will actually permit the people to have a court of justice, a court of law. It doesn't exist in the United States. It's in the imaginations of the people that they think it does.
Yeah.
Ollie, are you still there?
Yeah, one last comment. Mm-hmm. I made a comment on one of Grant Torino's posts on Telegram. Okay, I didn't get a response from him, but I got a response from another gal, and she said, yeah, she did that, but they made a memory hole out of it. So I assume that meant they're covering it up. But here's the thing, whether you get any litigation or not, if you publicize that and get the word out, that's exposing and shining the light on them.
Well, the low-hanging fruit with Cuomo is anybody that had a loved one in a nursing home that died, I would go after him for wrongful death. And I know, I personally know local people here who lost a parent or a grandparent in a nursing home, and they're ticked off. They would sue. They would gladly join a suit against him, and that's where he's going to go down, because he did horrible stuff to many, many people, and, you know, perfectly healthy people that ended up dying because of what he did to make them sick. You know, it's murder is what it is. So that, to me, that's a low hanging fruit. Never mind the fact that, you know, he's pushing this mask thing and this vaccination thing and all this other stuff. You know, he went a step further. I mean, all the states have this, but why did he and a couple of these other states, a couple of these other governors, you know, they outlawed hydroxychloroquine that works. They should all, any governor that got rid of hydroxychloroquine and outlawed it should be up on murder charges and treason or whatever, because they had no right to do that. They have no knowledge of the subject, and who told them to not let people use hydroxychloroquine with zinc? Because that would have cut the cases down like unbelievable, like 85% or something. So that's another suit that should go out there. You know, I don't know. There's so much stuff out there. There's so much low-hanging fruit that you can go. People can get together and put this stuff together and start suits. I don't know. You know, I mean, we don't like to use lawyers, but I'll tell you what. Right now, it looks like they're throwing Cuomo under the bus. So you probably could get a lawyer that would love to win a case in their kangaroo courts. They might actually. I think he's a sacrificial lamb now. So I think there's a chance of beating him. I don't think they're going to protect him because he was so stupid that they're going to just let him go. I think they're going to let him throw him to the dogs and let people rip him apart, basically.
No doubt about that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's very interesting. Look at, you know, when Trump was in office, they all worked in one accord. They had one voice, and they attacked and attacked and attacked and attacked. The narrative was the same. It was controlled across the entire, you know, networks of radio and TV, and it was just entertainment everywhere, because they came together in one accord to focus on Trump. Now, the interesting thing is they came together in empty promises to all these people. And when you sit back and really look to see what's going on, you know, there is a biblical principle, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And now that we're looking at that and watching what they're doing, we're starting to see factions turn against themselves. There's major groups working up against Cuomo, for instance, okay, that was on their side, but they're eating each other up. It's very interesting to watch those things that are taking place.
No honor among thieves, Jeff. All right. We done, Ollie? Anything else?
Yeah, just one last comment. I really think that there's going to be a lot of people hung for crimes against humanity by the time it's all said and done. But thanks, guys.
Yeah, and there needs to be, Ollie. I agree. All right. Thank you, Ollie.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to go to Aslew from Missouri. You've been unmuted.
Good evening. How you doing?
Very good. How's it going? Good to hear your voice.
I hate to bother you guys about this again, but, you know, in the text that I dealt with cancer, I sent the affidavit of non-consent on November the 3rd, 2020, and they just now respond to the affidavit, but it's a non-response. And they say that, well, they changed the amount on the text that I owe a little bit from what it was. And they say that, and they send the tax warrant with it. And this came from the director of taxation. So I was just wonder. Okay, they talking about that they expect me to settle the full amount which I owe, and the amount that I asked them to prove to get approval claim.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, I send them the forms, the 4490 and 56, but they're not even mention anything about that.
Really?
No.
And it took them 4 months to answer you?
Yes. And they certify it. And this signature on there, it looks like it's some kind of copy.
Yes.
It don't look like, you know.
Look, they don't want to answer you. They're not going to answer you because they can't answer you. And you got to keep drilling on this. And this is a very important point. No lawyer will make these points that we're going to talk about. But the one that I'm going to make right now, they should, but they still won't. Maybe for fear that they would be then, looked at by the IRS or whatever. But the bottom line is this. No court case can go forward without some sworn statement. Okay? You have to have a sworn affidavit. And in the IRS, you never get anything sworn. Nothing. Not even the details of their paperwork against you that they claim you broke the law. Nothing is sworn to. They may write a paper and they say, I swear, and even use the word sworn by and all that other. But if there is no notary, no judge, or someone signing it to make it an actual affidavit, then it is no sworn truth at all. And so a case cannot go forward without that. The other thing is, if you look into the paperwork and look up the codes and go down the rabbit hole of their codes, you'll find out it does nothing the IRS does applies to the people.
You're right, John. I did.
Lots of fuel, farm activity, just weird things that they go through and exercise pages and pages of insane things on it. I don't even know what they're talking. Nobody knows what they're talking about.
I did look up the coach that they based their they referenced the income tax on it, which is got this, KSA 79-3235. It says a collection of delinquent taxes, tax lien, collection of income taxes or tax lien, and which is a type of tax is the individual income or the corporate income tax and privilege. That's what they have on one quote. And the second quote they have, it says retailers sales tax collection of delinquent taxes tax lien. So,
yeah, but if you go if you dig deep into their forms when they advise you of their authority and power, and you look down into it and you look to the jurisdictions. And you run down the rabbit hole of jurisdictions. And when I say run down the rabbit hole, you get a code, okay? And then it refers, and it talks in language that appears, oh, they're talking about me. They're trying to put me into that kind of a situation. And how do I prove I'm not? Well, you know, there are meanings of things, and they'll refer to another code under this one and under that code. And if you go two or three levels down, all of a sudden you get down to the meat of the matter. And the meat of the matter is everything the IRS does identifies with commercial activity specifically and some other items, but mostly and specifically with fuel, okay? Whether it's jet engine fuel or even just gasoline and different fuels that people would have on a farm and maybe storage. I mean, that's where they're bringing it from. I did a paper on this. I probably should publish it, but if I did publish it, it could cause a lot of problems. So I've been leery about publishing it, to be honest with you. They're still on my back. They haven't left me alone for 20 years. And I'm in court with them still right now as we speak. I won my case, and they're turning it over. It's absurd. They have nothing. They haven't put any sworn affidavits in there. They have no proof of claim. They went into my bank accounts and looked and everything. They had no fiduciary authority to do that. I made all those points. I laid out the fact that I'm not the person they're talking about, claiming that I'm responsible or reliable for anyone. And they ignore all that. They call it frivolous. That's what he says. Oh, it's all frivolous. They use that word constantly, you know. This is the game they play. You can hold them off. You can, and I will tell you one thing. Once they talking about liens or they talking about warrants, when they get to that point, okay, you need, and this is a difficult thing to do because you're not going to get a lawyer to represent you on this, so you really have a lot of homework to do. But you have to represent yourself. You're the only one that's going to be able to do this. But you have to file. You have to sue them before they go after you, because they're going to go after you criminally.
if they end up taking you into the court. And if you sue them first, they can't move against you criminally until you finish off, because you're challenging everything they're saying and doing. And that frustrates them. You know, I won a case against them. I've been thrown out on a couple of others, and they came back in with another case. They tried to throw me out of that, and then the U.S. attorney actually forfeited the case because they didn't respond in time. Okay, so I filed an affidavit of default. They defaulted, and the judge thought, well, he didn't really mean it, so I'm going to let him come back into the court. Now, I've never heard that in my life. Okay, you default. It's at zero. No, you know, in order to get past the default, it's very, very difficult. First of all, you have to prove that you actually never served, you never received the paper. So you got to prove that first and foremost. And even after you prove that, you have to prove a second thing. And the second thing is that you have a good chance of winning. You have to have a strong case. But in any event, again, they make up their rules. They make up the law. They apply it this way or they apply it that way. They'll apply it both ways, you know, as long as it is, works out for the good for them, they'll apply it. They're just evil. There is no justice in our courts at all, zero. And I don't care what court you go to, there is no justice. I mean, maybe you can go to a small claims court and get justice there. Those people aren't even lawyers anyway. But many, the judges, they're not lawyers, so they really don't understand much about law. But nevertheless, there's no justice in the courts.
So what are you saying that I should sue them?
I would beat down and on them and constantly put in that point, where is the affidavit to move this case forward? Where is the proof of claim? It does not exist.
Right.
You got to keep sticking it in their nose and their ear and
send it registered mail every time.
Everything is registered.
Send it registered mail.
I do not.
But
do
you
not.
Never answered this.
I never.
I when I sent that out the last time I did, and then the person that I sent to, and now they changed the name of the person coming in, or another letter coming from them is different person, different amount.
They got lots of them. But look at they. I never ever. Whenever I get any communications from the IRS. Anything, I respond, no matter how simple or whatever, anything they're saying, I respond in an affidavit form. Get it sworn to and deliver it into the mail and send it out to them, and you get the return receipt, or you look it up on the Internet if you're just using the certified paper, and you get the dates and times when they got it, and you just keep it. You see, but you got to be on top of it. You got to be responding back to them constantly, specifically asking them the questions and whatever it is that they're saying, and very directly making the point. To my knowledge, I don't owe tax on anything. So you're going to have to tell me what that is. Could you please send me a proof of claim and give them a proof of claim? Put a copy of that, the 44.
I did twice.
Yeah.
And say, please,
I did.
So I can understand what it is you're talking about. You see, you're building receipts right now by doing that. So when you get into the court, you could talk to the jury. I have a lot to tell the jury if I have to get in there. And it's not just about the papers I wrote, but about the law that they're applying and how it should be understood. Of course, they're going to try to stop me from talking about that. I'm going to talk about the Constitution. They're going to stop me or try to stop me about talking about that. But this is what you got to do. You got to, if they're writing you a letter, you stop building a case.
You know, what I think is going on with her is I think that, you know, that 4450 and that used to stop them in their tracks. And I think the reason it did is because the people that were getting it understood the gravity of it. And they didn't know what to do. Now they got a bunch of flunkies in there. I don't even think they're going to be around after March, Aslu. I think they're going to be done.
No.
Well, this is the director of taxation, so she should be knowing something like that.
Yeah, but
right?
Is it her? You said it looked like it was stamped. I mean, they could have these flunkies just put these.
It looks like it's a stamp, a copy.
Yeah, so it's not her. I don't know how you would get to her, but I'm telling you, they got a bunch of probably, you know, immigrants or somebody that's probably half literate. You know what I mean? And they're just sending you stuff back to make you nervous. And
that's what I think. That's what they're trying to do is make me fearful.
Absolutely, that's how they operate. And I don't think I think if a supervisor ever got a hold of it and they actually saw what you were saying.
No, the supervisors are as guilty as they are. They look at, they take all my papers go to special places because at some point they'll. I last paper I wrote was like, I don't know, 6 months ago to them, maybe even further. And they're still sending me, every month they send me, we need more time, we've got to go look at, give us another 60 days. And then 60 days later, I'll receive it on, we still need more time, we're still researching. Why are they doing that? Well, they're doing that because I'm in court with them. That's why they're doing that.
Yeah, they got the different address on this, too, to, you know, to respond. So from the address that they had on the previous.
It's a game. It's a game. So
yeah, that's.
They're kicking you around to different departments. They're trying to wear you
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And here is the thing. They said, you
yeah,
know, the
take
tax.
The opportunity of that. Make that an opportunity, okay? Take that letter. Dig down deep. Look for a code that they may write. Usually the codes are written on forms that they'll attach, and they say, hey, go back here because it's written under this law, and they give you the form, you know. But whatever it is, take that information. Respond very specifically to the things that they're accusing you of or asking for or claiming or whatever. Just very specific, on the point, short and sweet,
okay.
Not long-winded, okay? And when you do it, you do it in a letter in an affidavit form. You do it just like a letter, but, it you know, you put it verified on the top, okay? You know, top right-hand side, maybe underneath the date, you put verified, okay?
Uh-huh.
And verified letter. And then at the bottom of the letter, you stick in place the information that you write up for a notary to sign, and you sign it in front of a notary. You get a couple of copies, which you keep for one of the originals, and then you send it to that individual, and then wait for the next one. And you'll get it from another. They'll give you another name next time, and another name this one. They're going to escalate it. It's just a game they're playing. It's form. If you look down, there's a form number. Okay. And also they refer to, sometimes they'll refer to those forms within the papers, but it's a form letter. And when you
you're
right, they're going to respond with another form letter. They're going to make more accusations. They're going to make more claims. And you're going to respond, oh, my goodness, I really want to fix this problem. I don't know about these things. Please tell me so I can look. Where do I find this information? Give me that proof of claim so I understand and I want to pay my bill. You know, that kind of an attitude. And you're building a case. Remember, they'll go on for 2 years usually before they even try to come out and take things. But this back and forth thing, they're really, you know, seeing first of all, do they want to screw around with you? Okay, that's number one. And how bad do they want you? You know. But the thing is every time they send something, you send it back. Now you go into court and you talk to the jury. Look, I beg these people. I ask them. I don't know what they're talking about. They don't have a proof of claim. They've never given me an affidavit. I have written a letter, and they frightened me so much, I decided I'm going to write to them and certify every letter with verification as far as the swearing to it. And this is what I did, but they still don't answer. I'm asking the court right now, what is the claim? Where is...
And
you know what that
bodes to? They have to prove that you had intent to break the law. And all those letters show your intent not to break the law.
And that's a point to be brought up in front of a jury if you do.
That's right. I intended to break the law. You can't get information out of these people.
Yeah, they have the tax. It says tax reg, a number, and then also the originator, a system, and the case number under there. I think that's, you know, to scare me, but, you know, so
everything
like you said.
Fear. That's what they play upon.
Fear. I ran that. I asked the Lord to, you know, to give me the peace if this is real or not. But I look in the signature. It doesn't look real. And then I look at the address. It's a different address. It's a different person. So I will do the affidavit, like you said, and just, you know, ask them for, you know, to please show me the proof of that.
Right, because you don't know what they're talking about.
Right, exactly. Okay, yeah. Sounds good.
I'll tell you what they did. I'll tell you one of the things they do. If you become a target, and I think they just pick anybody sometimes, you know, there are certain people that are targets. There's no doubt about that. But then there's just the general public. They just pull them out of a hat. Let's go after this one. Let's go after that one. And they'll look into an account that they have. And if they get a negative response from the person, if the person doesn't respond to them or they ignore them, what they'll do is they look into the account, for instance, you know, that they've had a checking account or savings account or whatever, and they'll see, oh, okay, look, at $40,000, $50,000 went through this account, this is all illegal, by the way, $50,000 went to the account, so let's go chase them for taxes. You owe us $50,000.
Uh-huh.
And I know that's a fact. That's an absolute fact.
Yeah, they use one of your numbers saying that that's the tax that you owe.
That's it. You've got money in the bank.
And that's going to shake you. You're like, wait a minute, how can I owe $50,000 in tax when that's all the money I ever had? You know?
That's the other thing. You know, they came after me for over $250,000, okay? They went after my son, $250,000. He was a cash register guy, you know, worked on a cash register in Stop and Shop. Okay, how does he make $250,000 in 1 year? You know, so again, you know, you go to court, and especially if they've escalated it that much, the way they do it, I would bring my accounts and show it to the jury. Look, this is the money. Look at the numbers they got. $40,000. What kind of money flew through my account that year? $40,000. How could that be taxed? What are they talking about? You see, you gotta go against them and use their own words and respond to everything they say. When they say you let it, do not put it off, do not ignore it, because you are acquiescing to them, and they will beat the heck out
right.
of you.
Right. Yeah.
Get you into court.
Well, to me, it looks like they are going after the my straw man name. And,
don't get into that. You go stand on the law as best you can. You stand on the facts and the Constitution as best as you can. They're going to try not to apply those things, but you got to stand on them. Because remember, if you do go to court with these people, look at them. If you do this properly, they're not going to really bother you at the end of the day, because they're going to look at this and say, look at this person stacking the deck on their own side. They're preparing. They've done applications.
That's what I say. Sooner or later, a supervisor, somebody who really knows what's going on, is going
to
look at that.
Right.
I want to make another point. Someone like me, they're going to come out after regardless to try to get me. Okay? Someone like you, because you know, you don't have a big mouth like I do, you know, you're not really a target. You're just, someone they pulled out of the hat. Let's go. Let's make an example out of this person. Let's suck out of whatever we can.
Yeah.
To tell a story to other people, and they'll get frightened and they'll pay their taxes, because that's what they do. They're Nazis.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think they got me marked, because I've been in and out in federal court in Kansas, so. So they're probably trying to pull something and make me look bad. So, but
well, if somebody gets a line on you and they want to be vindictive to you, they can be terrible. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think they will leave you alone if you're very careful making your case as you go along. Because at the end of the day, before they take this into court, someone's going to look at all this stuff, and the legal department's going to look at this, and they're going to maybe say, well, this is a case we may not want to risk. Okay.
You're
going to talk to the jury. You're going your attitude is going to be exactly what Gerard mentioned. Is you're going to be expressing the intent to do good and not the intent to do bad. But they would not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I called you, and I'd make the point to the jury. Look at if I did send you a bill for $20,000. And are you going to pay that bill? If you know what it's about, are you going to pay that? Are you going
no.
to give me an itemized paper on this. What is this about? You know, I'm a lawyer. Give me the itemized, itemized papers. Let me see what the bill, you know, what made up this bill.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're doing all these things and saying these things, you could show the jury. They're not going to take you to court then. Because they do jury trials. They're not real juries. They're all stacked. They're stacked juries to get the right people. But you can turn that around with the fact that you've shown you really wanted to play ball with these people. I wanted to pay my fair share. That's what I wanted.
Yes, I did mention that in one of the first affidavit that I sent out, but they never really talk about anything about what I spent. They just send the same notes and
listen, you gotta keep track of everything you send them. And you can start recycling your paperwork back to them.
Okay. Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
You do a good paper and they don't answer you and then they send you something back. Now send them back the same thing.
They're acquiescing, yeah.
Right. Right.
That's right. That's exactly what I was thinking to do.
Yeah. And it saves you all that work. You go in the file, pull it out, you know.
Yes, sir.
Here we go.
Well, again,
I'm a fighter. I'm all the way in on this thing. I am not going to give up on this thing. I'm going to win.
If they send you 25 papers and you send back, and that's not an exaggeration. They'll send you 25 papers one after a month, you know, they'll send you lots of papers. And if you respond to every single one of them and you have that stacked up like Gerard is talking about, you got it all stacked up. And now you're in court and you say, well, look at here's my affidavits. Here, I've been begging. Where's yours? I see. You put a blank piece of paper and you show the blank piece, nothing on it. That's them. I have nothing. Matter of fact, I'd show them the 4490 and the Form 56. I'd show them those two forms and say, hey, this is the law that is required in order for the government to come out. And this is the law, okay? In order for the
government right.
to come out against you, they have to fill out those forms and swear to it. That's called an affidavit. That's what brings us into this court right here. And they
that's
don't
right.
That form mm-hmm. for that. Matter of fact, I said to the judge, can I bring these over here? They can fill them out now. And I'll carry it over to those and give them to the people. Say, fill it out and find yourself a notary. Let's go do it. You know, they can't because they can't prove nothing. They'd be lying and they'd be in trouble.
All right. Sounds good. I just want to confirm something because I already thought about that, sending out what I had already and maybe a little bit of explanation what they have in here, but that's what I was going to do.
I'm going to take my paper that I wrote for the court against the IRS, okay, and I'm going to post it as a memorandum. I'm going to take it out from being a paper filed in the court, but paper filed as a memorandum, and I'll post it on the website. And give me a couple of weeks to do that. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks from now, you ask me if I've done that and remind me if I didn't. But I will work together. It should be pretty quick. I got to get done. It shouldn't take me any more than an hour or two to put that together because the paper's done. I just got to bring it into a different form. And I'll put it up on the website so you'll be able to make a really good position against these people that they have nothing, absolutely nothing.
No wonder they want to go after you, John.
Sounds good to me. Hallelujah.
when they start getting 1,000 of those memorandums in a week, they're going to go, where did this come? Oh, it's off that National Liberty Alliance site. Gerard wrote them. Yeah.
Right, John. Okay. Sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you guys for all you do.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. Sol Rodriguez, you've been unmuted. Are you there?
Yes, hi. How are you guys? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate all your hard work. As you can tell, I am new with you guys. Found you on YouTube and sign up with you guys right away. 2 weeks maybe in a mm-hmm. since I
well welcome.
Thank you so much. Hey, I wonder if you guys would have someone who can like help me, guide me on how to approach the traffic citations. A little bit of what I've been doing, I live in St. Louis, Missouri, and I start practicing or exercising my right to travel back in October 2018. Got pulled over by December 31st and then by April 26, 2020, and until now I receive a court appearance.
This is for traffic?
No.
Yeah, it's for traffic. How are you exercising your right to travel? You got plates on?
No.
So you're driving around with no plates and no driver's license?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So just to get things straight where you are.
Do you have property or some kind of funds laid aside should you get into an accident to deal with that accident? Because if not...
No, not yet.
Okay, but if you don't have, you know, something, let's say you get into an accident and it's your fault, okay? Someone's got to pay for those doctor bills and repairs and so on and so forth. And if you don't have anything, that would be a wrongdoing. So insurance is something that people should consider if they don't have the assets to be...
Well, John, that's the biggest part of a felony that they get you for with a car that's not registered and unregistered and unlicensed. But the insurance is the big one.
Registration is another problem. Yeah,
I'm just saying that the big fine is no insurance.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So look at... You need insurance if you are going to drive a vehicle, unless, again, if you've got the assets to be able to cover some heavy-duty bills should you injure somebody. And even if I had that kind of assets, I still would have insurance because I don't want to pay out that kind of money, lose everything you got. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I would never advise someone to not register the vehicle and not get a license plate. Look at... I don't want to go through it, but I do, because I just don't want the hassle. I don't want to be spending my, every week or other week in jail, number one. The same thing with a license, okay? Having a license doesn't take away any rights from you. And I've driven commercial from time to time, and who knows? I may want to drive commercial again. It's a good ID, too, so I have a driver's license. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So I don't put myself in a position where I complied with them somehow. But whenever I get a ticket, okay, what I do, and this works, I got to say, probably half the time, okay? If I get a ticket, I write a paper, and I will, I know I said I'd post it. I don't know if I ever did. I should post a paper on this. Maybe in a couple of weeks I'll look around. If I didn't post a paper, I'll post one. And I just send this one paper that I send into the court, and half the time I never hear back from them ever again. Nothing. Nada. And the other half of the time, they ignore it. And they'll take a while usually to respond to me. They'll ignore it, and then they'll offer me a plea. At that point, they'll say, do you want to this, that, or the other thing? So they offer you a plea, and pay $50 or something, Now, I when I get that, I don't bother going to court. I pay the money, and then you got to pay the other fee, usually $50 for the state too, so it's $100, whatever it is. I'm not happy with that, but I don't have time to fight it, and I don't have time to go to jail either on it. So I have a file where I have probably about 6 or 7 tickets in there over the years that eventually I'm going to deal with. But I'm not going to deal with it now because there's no courts of justice. And in common law, there is no statute of limitation because there is no statutes, okay? So I can apply that at any time. But again, if you really want to fight it and get some experience in the court, you could do that too. You can try to make your position in the court, make your argument, get to feel comfortable in a courtroom and feel confident to yourself so you're building up for a case that you might be in the future have to deal with that you're now going to have to go to court and represent yourself. Everybody should learn how to represent themselves. I believe that we should, our schools, if you're going to go to 12 years of school that like we do in our nation, by the time you get out of that 12 years, you should have a college education. If you're going to strike for some doctrine, then you go to college. But ultimately, you should have a college education by the time you get out of your 12th grade. That's number one. Number two, of course, our children should know the Constitution inside and out. They should understand the mechanisms of our government, how our government works inside and out. And they should know how to walk into a courtroom and represent themselves. And I hate to even use that word, represent yourself, but to go in your own behalf and make your case and win your case, and understand how the system works. This is not rocket science to understand this stuff, but it does take some time, and it should be part of our normal, everyday education. But unfortunately, in the environment we've had in the past years, we couldn't have that, because after all, why would they want to teach the slaves how to come free? They don't want to do that, and that's why they keep the slaves dumb. We don't know nothing
about our political process. And truly, you know, ultimately the details, the mechanisms. We don't really know nothing about how the judicial system works. Those are the two major things that we should be experts in as people of a republic, you know, under common law, a republic. We should know these things because we can't have a common law republic if you don't know those things. And we don't deserve a common law republic if we don't know those things. But you certainly can't maintain one that's been given to you by our founding fathers if you're not going to go and hold on to it and fight for it. So that's what we have to do. So we have to change our educational system. And the people that have been through the educational system, it's time to go back to school and spend some time to learn these things. And we teach these things here at National Liberty Alliance. But people need to learn these things. Otherwise, you can't have liberty. It's not yours to have. You cannot have it. It's not yours.
Hey, John, Brent is here. We got, I don't know, a little while.
Yeah, if you want to pass over to him for a while.
I just so you know. And, you know, there's a guy that was an ex-road patrol trooper that now holds classes on how to fight traffic tickets. And the reason I like this guy is because he knows how to frustrate them. He gets the judges in a horn dilemma that they can't answer. He has a 96th percentile success rate because he knows the system and he knows the language. And I have to, you know, I'm teasing you now because I think it's something Lewis Law or something. I'll look it up and see. Maybe you can get on and remind me next week, and I can give you his website. I don't, you know, it's like I don't have time to do that because I'm, you know, we're working on all this other stuff. So I try not to get in trouble with the traffic stuff. But if you want to do it and you want to, and he has a really good method, whatever it is he's doing, you know, as far as, you know, he was a cop and he knows. He's got a methodology. I started looking at it, but I just don't have time to study everything that you could. If you put the time in, you could become good at it, probably. You know.
Yeah, and, I want to do that.
Yeah, and what it is from what I can see, he gets them in a horn dilemma where they can't move right or left. He gets the judge to say something where he's hung by the tongue, and he gets them every time. The prosecutor or the judge, and he has certain things, and he says, this is what you carry in a car, and this is the language you're going to use, and don't stick your own words in, and stick to the program, and I guarantee you, by when you get to court, the prosecutor is not going to be able to answer this. So he gives you a narrative that you give to the cop on the road, and then he gives you another narrative when you go into court, and he has a narrative if you have to deal with the judge. I'm telling you, 96% is, you know, success rate. So, and I'll see if I can get you that information if that's what you're into, okay?
One more question, please. I live in the state of Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri. Do you guys have any people there, members? Of,
you can go in our directory and go under Missouri, and then you'll see whoever the county leader is and the state leaders. It should be on our site. I don't, I'm not familiar with Missouri, but we have listing of our members of the at least of the regional, you know, leaders on our website. When you go in under the blue bar, there's a directory, and you put your state in there.
Great.
And it'll tell you who's around you. And then when you call them, they can direct you to more people closer, maybe.
Right. Okay, I'm going to check on that, and we get in touch next week then, and hopefully if you can find the name of this
Yeah, I think it's guy. Lewis Law. Yeah, I have to look and see. I haven't been on there in a while. But it's a good, you know, he's pretty good, I'm telling you. And I've sent other people to them, and they came back and said they had good luck, so.
Yeah. Also, John says he will see if he posts a document on the website, or he will find it and put them there. So if that will help me, I will definitely be looking to get my hands on that document.
Are you a paying member? Have you
yeah.
Okay,
yes,
because there are
you guys.
He did have papers for, you know, that you could use in traffic court. That you couldn't get into them unless you were a paying member. So,
I just joined you 2 weeks ago, but I
right. So there's papers there that you could use, like the challenge of jurisdiction and other ones. Some are more specific for that would be more specific for traffic. I mean, not that we don't get into traffic too much, but it's still the fundamental things about, you know, as far as, you know, proof of jurisdiction and that type of stuff. And like John said, those are the type of paper he puts in. And sometimes they'll throw the case out because they don't want to answer it. They don't want to, you know, they want easy money. They don't want to have to fight for their money, you know.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. You guys have a good night.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Goodbye. Hey, Brent, I don't know where you are. Can you unmute yourself? Does anybody see Brent?
Yeah, I'm here, Gerard.
There you go. You want to say a few words before we go? We got a half hour, 20 minutes.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you very much. This is Brent. Can I start now?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Gerard. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. You can go there and listen to me talk from now the cows come home. If you want to. If you don't want to, you can shut me off, but I'm there. And a lot of the things you can find there, books and MP3 clips. My comments here today are my own, and I take responsibility for them, nobody else. Nobody else's comments but my own. I don't purport to present anybody else's point of view, but I want to tell a story about something that happened to me today and yesterday. Got a call from a fella that somebody else referred to me. He's a disabled veteran of the Armed Forces of the United States, a disabled veteran in his 40s, and he's under criminal indictment because he beat the stuffings out of a fellow with a one of those ice scrapers you carry in your car in the wintertime. And he was in the grocery store. And he was coming through the line, and some fellow behind him said, "How's come you haven't got a mask on?"
Oh,
he said,
"Here we go.
Here we go again." So he said, "Well, I don't wear a mask because I can't breathe when I wear it." Now, he left the store, and this fellow that was haranguing him followed him all the way to his car out in the parking lot, getting right on his tail. And it was obvious that he was a sodomite. And this fellow told me it was obvious to him he was a sodomite. And he said some derogatory things to him. I mean, he said some derogatory things to the sodomite that would have shamed any decent man. Of course, didn't shame him. He admitted to it and bragged about it. I won't say what it was, but it had to do with, well, I don't even want to say what it was, but he accused him of it. He said, "Get away from me." He said, "If you follow me anymore, I don't know what I'll do. Just get away from me." Well, he kept getting uglier and uglier, followed him all the way out in the parking lot. Of course, there were people in the parking lot of the grocery store. And when they got to the other side of his car and he got ready to open the door, this fellow was almost on top of him. Now, all this is on video, you see. I don't think he's pulling my leg. And as he was trying to put his stuff in the car, this sodomite kept bumping him with his feet, bumping this disabled veteran's feet with his feet, kicking him in the heels, of course, thinking the camera couldn't see that. Well, once you start invading another man's space like that, that's an invitation. You're inviting him to hurt you. And he said, "Get away from me." This is the story he told me. And he kicked him a few times, and he reached in his car, and he just grabbed what was handy, which was the ice scraper, a big long one, and he said he came down on him real hard and just began to beat the stuffings out of him with it. Took him to the pavement, finally. Of course, people all over the parking lot, they called the police, and he left this fellow laying on the pavement and drove away. calmly and confidently. Well, his buddy called him later that night and said, "Hey, man, you made the evening news." He said, "What do you mean?" "Well, they said they're looking for you. They know your license plate because his license plate in his state, if you're a disabled veteran, your license plate says so, and it's a real nice license plate," he says. So they were looking for him, so he heard about it from his buddy. So next morning, he drove down to the police station and said, "I heard you fellas looking for me. Here I am." And so what do? They arrest him and charge him with violent behavior of some kind. Well, he got nipped by the machinery there, and now he's in the system. So he's on probation. Now, this is a true story, and they called me this morning before daylight. Actually, see, the story he told me that I just told, he told a while back. But then he called me this morning before daylight. He said, "Brent, did I get you out of bed?" I said, "No, I'm tooling around here, getting a cup of coffee, et cetera." He said, "Well, I got to tell you what happened last night." "What happened last night?" He said, "Well, you know I'm on bail." I said, "Yeah, I know." He said, "Well, I went to get gasoline." And he said, "One of those kind of places where there's gas pumps on both sides of this office that stands in the middle, and you go into the office and pay. And there's a door on both sides, and I went in, and the fellow standing behind me in line started giving me a hard time about not wearing a mask. And I asked him to get away from me. The sign says, 'Get back 6 feet.' Least you can do is get back 6 feet if you think that's so important." And he got uglier and uglier. And he said, before it was over, right inside the gas station, this fella kicks him, just like the other, like the sodomite did, kicked him. And he shoved him back out of the way, and this fella, who was much bigger than my man, came back at him, grabbed his face, put his finger in his mouth, and started to pull. You know how you can pull on a guy inside of his mouth? It really hurts. I said, "Well, what'd you do?" He said, "Well, I chomped down on his finger," and he said, "I didn't let go like a snapping turtle till the next 4th of July." And he said, "I tore his finger up. He couldn't get loose." I said, "Well, did he try to punch you?" He said, "No." He said, "Then I let go of his finger, and I started wailing on him, and I got him down on the floor and beat the stuffings out of him." Now, this is a disabled veteran whose knees don't even work anymore hardly. He said, "I can't afford to be fighting like this. I could blow my knees out and I wouldn't get them back at all, plus all the other problems I got." And he's not a very big man. He's a small man. He's a small man. Well, he beat the stuffings out of this guy. Well, in this case, the cops came and arrested the fella that took the drubbing and did not arrest my man. They arrested the other fella and drug him away. He said, "Why is this happening to me?" I said, "Well, it sounds to me like it's being orchestrated. They're out to get you." He said, "Who's out to get me?" I said, "The devil himself. And he's orchestrating all these useful idiots of the evil empire who put their brains, the devil has persuaded them to put their brains in a 5-gallon bucket and fire a .45 slug into it, like most of the country apparently now." And so he goes to court on the charge that when the sodomite went after him and he beat him down with a with a ice scraper. He goes to court. The judge says, "You can't come in here without a mask." He said, I can't breathe without a mask, or I can't breathe with a mask." He said, "Well, you can't come in my courtroom," and gave him a hard time, threw him out. Said, "You come back." The judge said, "You come back at the hearing the next time," and gave him the time and the date. "And you either come with a mask or a medical exemption." So I told him to go in with a mask and a medical exemption. You see what happened. We went in with a mask on, had a medical exemption in hand, and when his time came to have his motions heard, he gave the judge the medical exemption. The judge said, "This is continued then," and gave him a date. So he goes down to the clerk's office to get the record and find out what's going on in the case, and they not only would not give him the record, they wouldn't talk to him. Said, you got to wear a mask. And he said, I looked around, and there wasn't a clerk, and the clerk's office had a mask on. But instead of helping me, which, of course, the judge said that I had an exemption, and I provided one, they called the sheriff's deputies to come and arrest me. That's what the clerks did. So they did. And they threw him out of the courthouse, said if he comes back, they're going to arrest him and throw him in jail. He said, what's a guy supposed to do? I said, well, it seems to me, and I've been watching this for a year or better. Actually, I've been watching this kind of madness since 1999 or whenever that 9/11 thing happened. It's gotten worse since. Courthouses aren't open. Courtrooms aren't open. Court's not open. Friends, neighbors, and kin, if the courts aren't open, and by effectually, they are not open. You can't get a jury trial. One court said, well, we got to rent a church to get a jury trial so when people come to watch, they can sit 6 feet apart. Friends, neighbors, and kin, there is no remedy for stupid. You know, people have been saying for years that you can't fix stupid. But what is stupid? Well, we can define it in different ways, but the first thing we can say is you're looking at it when you look at the majority of American people, of people all over the world. Now, let me give you a definition of stupid here and how dangerous it is. This is from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was the last man that the Nazi regime, by the order of Adolf Hitler, ordered that he be hung. This is the last man hung before the absolute and end fall of the Nazi regime. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a Lutheran pastor in Germany. He was hung 9 times by pianowire, and every time, just before he died, they'd let up the pressure, then they'd hang him again. Horrible death. Horrible evil. But Dietrich said this, listen to him. He wrote this before he was murdered. Stupidity is more dangerous as an enemy of the good than is malice. Stupidity is more dangerous enemy of the good than malice. One may protest against evil. It can be exposed and, if need be, prevented by use of force. Evil always carries within itself a germ of its own subversion in that it leaves behind in human beings at least a sense of unease. But against stupidity, we are defenseless. Neither protests nor the use of force accomplish anything against stupidity. Reasons fall on deaf ears. Facts that contradict one's prejudgment simply need not be believed. In such moments, the stupid person even becomes critical. And when facts are irrefutable, they're just pushed aside as inconsequential as incidental. In all this, the stupid person, in contrast to the malicious person, is utterly self-satisfied, and being easily irritated becomes dangerous by going on the attack. For that reason, greater caution is called for when dealing with a stupid person than with a malicious one. Never again will we try to persuade the stupid person with reasons, for it is senseless and dangerous. Wow. Well, all he's doing here is repeating what the Bible says. Peter the Apostle, in his epistle, the epistle of the Apostle Peter, says that such men, the stupid men, stupid's a word of precise definition. It means slow and thick. Another synonym in Old Anglo-Saxon is dollard. Dollard. Just thick and slow. Doesn't mean you don't know. Doesn't mean you can't think. It just means you're stupid. You refuse to think. You'd rather be thick and slow. You'd rather go along with the flow. It's easier. That's stupid. Get on the bandwagon. Oh, there was no election fraud. Anybody who says that is a conspiracy theorist. No, you're stupid. Real stupid. Stupidity is the problem. Malice, hate, we can deal with that. All of us deal with it every day. We suffer with it ourselves, and we suffer with it from others. We learn to deal with it, and that's how we keep going, and that's how we keep getting along. But stupid, you can't deal with it. Well, Peter the Apostle says that such stupid people are as unreasoning beasts, good for nothing but to be caught and killed. Now notice, he doesn't say they are unreasoning beasts. Let's be precise. He says they are as like unreasoning beasts. And truly they are. Stupidity infects the most formally educated of men. Ever learning, says Paul the Apostle, but never able to come, never able, can't, impossible to come to a knowledge of the truth. Never able means can't. And that's a good translation of the Greek text there. It's not even possible. You're dealing with an influence that is beyond human when you're dealing with stupidity of the kind we see our country suffering now, and indeed, the whole rest of the world. Oh, I know there are some people that don't participate in it. I'm hoping you don't. I'm doing my best not to participate in the stupidity, because once you go along with political correctness and you become stupid, your stupidity will grow, and you will destroy in the end not only yourself, you will destroy your family. You will destroy your friends. Anybody who touches you will be the unfortunate recipient of your stupidity. God help us. We're all prone to it. God help us. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, said David in the Psalms. See if there be some wicked way in me. And stupidity is a wicked way. Well, Gerard, there's not much I could say to what you already said. I heard some of what you said. We've been talking about this for a long time. The only thing that I can bring to the table, really, that's worth any while, ever, I suppose, is try to figure out what it is God says about this situation and repeat it. But Dietrich Bonhoeffer did a good job of encapsulating it and pouring it through his own personality and saying it the way he saw it. And he's a man who could speak from experience. He saw it happen in his own country, and it finally got to him. He should have left sooner. God help us. Back to you. Back to you, Gerard. Somebody tell me, am I still being heard, or was I talking to myself for the last 15 minutes?
No, we're enjoying your talk.
Oh, you're there. Okay. I'm done, though. Thank you so much.
And Gerard, I don't know what happened to him. He was making noise. I muted him. I guess I should unmute him now.
He might be shaking his head and speechless. Who knows?
Well, it doesn't look like he's here at the moment.
Well,
I think he hung up accidentally or fell off.
Well, let me keep talking, I suppose. Well,
there he is.
He's back. Okay, here we are. Gerard, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you now.
That's weird. I couldn't unmute myself. I don't know why this thing throws fits. But anyway, that was good, Brent. Thank you. And what do we got? Got like 8 minutes. Let me see who's in the queue here. Okay, we got Kenneth from Washington. Go ahead, Kenneth.
Hello, yes, also known as Infamous Kenny.
Infamous Kenny, okay.
Yeah, There were several things people were talking about that jumped right out at me. First of all, they complained that when they put in their FOIA request, they weren't getting any response. That's when you say, thank you, God, because FOIA, a public disclosure request, is the administrative equivalent of discovery. They are choosing to not put any evidence in your administrative record. Look, there's no evidence controverting your evidence. Who wins? You do.
Absolutely.
And they only got,
they only got so many days.
What's that?
They only have so many days to answer. Right?
Yeah, and you generally tell them how many. And their statute also tells them, but you can always bring them into your law firm and tell them how much time they have in your law firm. Now, I just sent in to the administration of NLA so they can publish it one way or another, claims against the administration of Facebook, Twitter, and some other social media people who obstructed my ability to communicate with my employee, Donald John Trump, when he was president, because they obstructed his communications back to me. Therefore, committing treason. And anyone else who feels the same way should read those and maybe send an administrative letter to those same respondents and tell them, hey, I'm similarly situated, I'm joining the claim. We can bring a class action suit that'll bring all of those billionaires down to their knees. And we do it by them not answering, setting our record, publishing it, and then when we get to court, there's no trial. There's an action for summary judgment. And the evidence is the administrative record that's been published. And that's all the evidence a court can see according to the Administrative Procedures Act. They can't bring any new evidence in. It's over. You've already won. Then they complained about the IRS. Well, 25 years ago, the IRS wanted to talk to me. Can you imagine that? They sent me one of those letters that says, come see us and bring your books and records. And I looked at it and I says, wow, that's not even my name on there. It sounds like my name if you do it phonetically, but I learned in first grade that people's names have big first letters and little letters. So I wrote back and says, hey, I got this letter. It might have been by accident. I don't know. But as far as books and records, I've got United States Code annotated. I got Revised Code of Washington. I've got some Black's Law dictionaries. And I went through a litany of some other law books that I had. And as far as records go, I got Iron Butterfly, and I got a DeVita. I got Ocean, Put Your Hand in the Hand. I got a Three Dog Night album and a few 45s. What kind of records did you want me to bring? What kind of party are you going to have? And I said,
you
back to
you
them.
Told them that, huh?
Exactly. They wrote back and said, you know what we mean? You just be here. I says, okay, well, I'll be there, but you won't tell me what kind of books and records you want. There's no way I can help you with that, but I will bring my notary and my videographer. Make a record of our meeting. Well, my dad had just recently become a notary, and I gave him the opportunity to come along as my notary. I bought him a 16-hour digital video recorder. And we went in, go into the office. Well, we got on the record down in the ground floor lobby in the Wells Fargo building. Went up to the fifth floor where the IRS was. Went into their offices and says, I'm here for this meeting with Agent so-and-so. And he says, are you recording this? I says, well, of course. You can't do that. I says, your rules say I can. And I notified you that I was going to do so. Do you have anything you want to put in the record? Didn't, apparently. Ran away. Come back out and says, you have to wait out in the lobby. So I went out in the lobby. Still on the record. They sent two agents out to tell me that meeting's been canceled. I said, what do you mean canceled? We're already on the record. Which one of you is agent so-and-so? Neither one was. Next thing you know, there are 25 agents or so out there trying to buy the presidency elevator. Gives up four, but we ain't leaving until that agent that signed those letters came out and told me it was canceled. Finally, this guy back said, I'm agent so-and-so. That meeting's canceled. I said, you got credentials? He held up his ID. I had the videographer zoom in on it, looked at the screen, and said, oh, good. You're here. We're already on the record. Do you have anything you want to add? No. It's canceled. I said, well, we're going to go down to the first floor lobby, and we're going to wait there on the record 10 minutes just in case you want to put anything on the record because you're entitled to due process as well. Got back, got it transcribed, and sent it to the agent, regional office, headquarters, and a few others, and said, here's what happened at the meeting. 6 weeks later, I got a letter from the IRS demanding that I never contact them again or have contact with them again for any reason whatsoever. No letters, no calls. Don't pay taxes, don't file returns, don't ever have anything to do with this ever again. That's a pretty nice letter to have, let me tell you. And then one of my asset protection estate planning clients had his IMF decoded and found out that he'd been paying $1 million a year in taxes on a distillery in Puerto Rico, and he never remembered buying one. So he sent me and one of his aides down to find it. Couldn't find it. Went to the real IRS headquarters in Puerto Rico, and they couldn't find it either, and we got escorted out of there by four armed guards. 6 weeks later, he gets a letter. Don't ever have contact with IRS ever again. He thought that was a pretty nice letter to get. And I just recently, matter of fact, today I think it was, scanned in, and somebody was talking about traffic tickets. I scanned in what I did to Thurston County, State of Washington corporations. They had three major outstanding tickets on me while they had me, while the feds had me back in Gitmo North torturing me for 7.5 years, ultimately winding up with both legs chopped off. And they said that as soon as I was no longer being in federal custody, they called it, but these places that they had me don't exist on paper, and they're known as Gitmo North. Anyway, so I set this administrative process, filed it in the court, served it on the county prosecutor, served it on the sheriff, served it on the attorney general, served it on the governor. And when I got back to Washington, they checked into it, and there's absolutely no record in Thurston County District Court of there ever having been a ticket.
Interesting.
Which goes along with exactly what God had me here when I was a special deputy sheriff at Thurston County. And he had me be acting inspector for 2 weeks and sit in on two of those smoky backroom meetings with lobbyists and legislators that we've all heard about. Well, God planted me in the middle of two of them, and they admitted two of the bills they were pushing were facially unconstitutional. But they told the legislators, it's not up to you to worry about whether they're constitutional or not. You pass it, it's presumed constitutional, unless and until a court of record declares it unconstitutional. If somebody knows the correct law and the correct procedure to get it declared unconstitutional, their case can be dismissed for other reasons, so a court of record never has a chance to rule on it. They both passed, they're both still on the books today. But I went home that night and I said, God, if you'll help me learn that law and procedure, I will learn it, live it, and teach it the rest of my life, no matter what. And boy, when God is your law professor, you learn things, let me tell you. You go into National Archives looking for one thing and find a whole bunch of other stuff. And you can see some of the results of that on the NLA website forums, where I've taken documentation and put it on there so that people can, one, learn it, and two, have the opportunity to go study it themselves and look it up for themselves. Because I tell people when I give a seminar, I say, don't take my word for anything. Just listen to what I say and then go look it up yourself and make sure I'm not making it up and running a scam on you. Because I want, if they look it up for themselves and they study it for themselves, they're going to actually know it and understand it, and not just something Kenny said.
Right.
But have these people read those forums, the state forums and the national forum. There's a lot of good information on there, some of which I put on there, but a lot from other people too. I've learned things off of those forums that are just absolutely powerful. And one other thing, they were talking, when I first was able to join the call, they were talking about this COVID thing. Well, yeah, it's a scam. I've looked up on the internet the electron microscope pictures of the supposed COVID virus, and I brought them up side by side with pictures of the common cold virus. And guess what? They look exactly the same inside and out. And a number of years ago, I had a guy in a limousine. Turns out he was a scientist from Finland, and he was one of seven scientists that developed the HIV virus. They had three parameters: sexually transmittable, readily detectable, and cause absolutely no harm to the human body under any circumstances whatsoever. Well, they put it in their patient zero. They were told it was just going to be used to study human sexual activity in the world. But once it reached a certain saturation point, they call all the doctors in, tell them, oh, they got this new virus in their system, and they got one of the diseases on this list. Tell them they got AIDS, and they're going to die. What happens when a guy in a white coat and stethoscope tells you you're going to die? You believe him, and your faith kills you. That's what people were dying of. Not HIV. Because this day it has no harm to the human body whatsoever. And seven scientists were going out into the world telling doctors not to be scammed, and they disappeared, all seven of them, just for the profit of AIDS and research and medication and all that crap. But the bottom line is, get on those forums and study the background behind a lot of this stuff. Everything from traffic to everything else.
Okay, good.
And I've got those things going with the social media types that people can join, and we'll turn them into class actions and take them down big time.
Okay, Kenneth, thank you.
No, when I go to court, I do not represent myself. I'm a living, breathing man under God. What would I represent myself as?
Yep, we got it.
Okay, well, have a good night. Okay, get
thank
on those
you very
forums.
Much. Yep, okay, we're out of time. See everybody back here next week. Same time, same station. Good show, and I'm sure it will be just as good next week. Thank you.